Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
We do need to stand shoulder to shoulder with our libertarian friends, and that is in the conservative conversation. And tonight we will be having Kelly Mordecai, one of our panelists, talking live from the California Libertarian Convention. He'll have some folks there speaking in. And so join us here at our roundtable discussion. And where he will be, as I said, Kelly will be reporting from the convention, and libertarians and conservatives have much in common. So come to the show and hear how close they are with conservatives and libertarians in their ideology, especially when it comes to the Constitution. Now, the patriots must unite in order to stave off the encroachment of a progressively increasing government. Of course, always remember, Bard's Logic is the grassroots We the People show. And while we're waiting for our panelist, Kelly, to come onto the show, I have an article that a dear friend of ours and a loyal listener sent to me, and it was rather disturbing. And so what we'll do is I'll read this, and I do see some folks wanting to chime in. But first, let me read this article. And the article, and this is from redstate.com, and it says, it was posted on the 25th. It says, next weekend, John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, and 25 other members of Congress are flying to Amelia Island to collaborate with a group dedicated to defeating conservatives in Congress. The Republican Main Street Partnership's offshoot, Main Street Advocacy, is hosting the event at the Ritz-Carlton on Amelia Island. Steve LaTourette, a liberal Republican, former congressman from Ohio, is the face in front of the group. LaTourette is good friends with John Boehner. Behind the scenes, LaTourette's group is funded by the vast left-wing conspiracy. According to an email inviting people to the event, people are attending have donated $5,000 to the PAC. And this is from Eric Erickson. And he says, as I've reported the first of the year, LaTourette's group has received money from left-leaning unions, George Soros-backed organizations, and major Democrat contributors. The Main Street Partnership has multiple offshoots, all housed on the sixth floor of the 7th Street office in Washington, D.C. Together, the groups, including Main Street Advocacy, went to, in the words of their backers, bolster our incumbents who are under attack from the far right and ensure that we hold on to the seats represented by pragmatic Republicans that would otherwise lose if it was the ultra-conservatives in the general runoff. Their disclosures exposed the lie. The group claims to be conservative and to support Republicans, but it is funded by the left. LaTourette himself has a long history of attacking conservatives and trying to defeat conservatism. Next weekend, he is luring the top there Republicans in the House of Representatives and 25 others to the Ritz in Amelia Island to shake hands and collaborate with the very donors' intent in defeating not just conservatives, but Republicans. So I think it's very important that we conservatives do stick with our brethren, and that is with libertarians who are part of the Libertarian Party, and of course, libertarians that are also in the Republican Party. And we do have a couple folks calling in, but first we will bring in our panelist, Kelly Mordecai, who is reporting live from California at the Libertarian Convention. So thank you very much, Kelly, for calling to the show and bringing the show with us tonight. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Doing great. Actually a little tired because I've been working on some political things and possible additions to the platform. But, yeah, there's a little bit of noise behind me. I had to go out in the hall because, of course, there's libertarians. They're just filtering in now. Tonight's kind of a mixer. In the day, we had a platform committee. But, yeah, a lot of people filtering in, and they're making some noise. And there's two parts of the Libertarian Party. There's Liberty, and then there's, of course, Party. And they certainly like to do that. So.
But tell us, you went to the platform meeting. Tell us a little bit about what you heard today at the meeting about the platform.
Well, we one of the movements in the platform meeting was about 3 hours. One of the movements is to try to simplify. I mean, this platform was written by some seriously intelligent people. You know, we're talking about to using, I propose this, well, guys, let's make this a principle and then make our platform shorter and refer to the 26 pages of platform. But I was looking at a number of things. Obviously, the platform, they're Second Amendment fans. They are, they don't like welfare. They don't like the NDAA. Let me find some of them here. I'm just digging through the pages here. They don't like victimless crimes. You know, there's a statute. Somebody goes to jail because they violated a statute, but nobody was harmed. You know, it kind of causes our jails to get filled up. Let me go to number 15, the right to keep and bear arms. They're pretty strong about this. Okay, yeah. Because the right to life, liberty, and property implies a right of defenses of self and property and a right to acquire and maintain the tools to exercise such defense, and because an armed citizenry is the final defense against government tyranny, and then they put some bullet points here, we repeal the laws regulating the ownership and bearing of arms, elimination of registration. And so basically that's the right to bear arms. They even talked about I know we had David Callahan on the show, and he talked about the first clause of the Second Amendment, which was a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. It says, we support the creation of volunteer militias independent of the National Guard. That would make David Callahan really happy. Another point was electronic election fraud, which Jim Condit was talking about. And he would be very giddy about this one because they are very well aware of this situation. Let me go through this and find this quick. Yeah, they don't like subsidies. I'm just kind of looking through this. They don't like, they want to do tort reform. Here's another one. They don't like the military being deployed overseas without a constitutional declaration of war. They're big into individual rights, of course. Education. Yeah, the compulsory. But they're big, they're supporters of, from the platform plank, they're supporters of homeschoolers and even tax refunds for private and parochial schools.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So then we got, I'm just kind of going through here.
Well, Kelly, we do have someone on the line. We go ahead and have them come in and see about them chiming in. We'll hear more from you, and then you're going to have some folks out there that you'll be talking to, correct?
Yeah, there's several more.
Okay, great. And then I have someone on the line who I'm going to bring in, and then we'll hear more about the platform and then the events of today. So 917, thank you very much for calling to the show. Just give us your name and where you're from. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on. My name is Joseph Manji. I'm calling from New York. And actually,
well,
I'm
the other end of the country. From where Kelly's at.
Definitely. All the way in the East Coast in a very, very liberal state, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
But the politics here are very complex. But I happen to be a very adamant supporter of Rand Paul. I like him for many reasons. I like his libertarian stances, but I also like that he integrates that with conservative stances and views. And that's why I think, in my opinion, he is probably the best chance or the most elected person to clinch the GOP nomination. He's also taking measures and steps that the GOP establishment has failed in doing in previous elections, such as reaching out to key voting demographic blocks, just like when he went to Howard University to reach out to different minority groups. The irony of it is I happen to be a political activist and working on the RAND PAC, which is a PAC designated to support candidates for the midterm elections who are libertarian or pro-constitutional candidates. And it really upsetted me today. I had a response from an individual that I don't know personally, but he actually stated that Rand Paul is a traitor of the United States because he believes in globalization. And, I'm just dumbfounded by the mentality and the mindset of some people who are so far out of touch with reality that they would actually make statements like that that make no common or logical sense. And it's pretty sad that there are people supposedly that are supposed to be in our base, and yet they're going after Rand Paul and attacking them in every way.
Mhm. Yes, certainly, and I think you're on the beginning of the show when we first started. I read that article from RedState.com, and it was written on the 25th. So, folks who are listening to this now, where it's not live on the archives, to check out that article about them meeting over there in Amelia Island, discuss strategies and combating against conservatives.
Oh, hey, Robert. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. Good, Kelly. And Joseph, by the way, if you're new, it seems like you're new here, and we really appreciate you coming out to the show. And one of the things that's different here than what you've probably heard in other talk shows, especially those, you know, that are on the radio dial instead of on the Internet, is that we do roundtable discussions, so you're more than welcome to stay on the call. And what we'll do is we'll just keep your mic open and we'll bring it back to you, you know, as well, because I like to try to give folks as much equal time as we can, and so you can stay with our discussion.
Sure, that would be my pleasure. I would greatly appreciate that.
Oh, great. Thank you, Joseph. So we'll go to you, Kelly, and then we'll bring it back to – and I know you have some folks that are going to be – you're going to be talking with there at the convention, then we'll bring it back to Joseph. So go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, I got with me Jedediah, and he is running for county supervisor in Nevada County, California. He's got some really good ideas regarding charter counties, which my understanding is that a charter county, the charter, supersedes state law. It's in our state constitution. He's got some other really good ideas, so I just kind of want to interview him. Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah, I'm hearing you great.
Okay, well, say hello, Jedediah.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, so,
thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks. Yeah, so, Jedediah, tell us about a little bit more about your campaign for supervisor, you know, kind of how you became a libertarian, and now you're running for supervisor.
Okay, well, I'll start with how I became a libertarian. I was just basically very active in my community, and as a nonpartisan, I had been declared nonpartisan for about 10 years at this point, when I ran into who at the time was the chair of the Libertarian Party doing outreach. We just were talking, and he wasn't doing any pushy outreach or anything, and I was like, wow, I kind of like what he's talking about, and he seems okay listening to what I have to say, and he's not, like, trying to change my mind in anything, and that's one of the big problems that I had with the two-party politics, because I felt like I wasn't able to really express my mind. And so that, with his outreach, I really felt comfortable.
Yeah.
Got me to libertarian parties every once in a while, and then eventually decided to join.
To join, yeah.
Yes.
So you felt a lot of the values that the Libertarian Party holds, like, you know, Second Amendment rights, et cetera, was pretty much...
Yeah, well, so in the why I'm running and what I'm running for, I believe in the right to local self-governance, and that's predominantly what my campaign is about, the right to local self-governance. And to increase our local self-governance, what I'm trying to do is get our county charter. Right now we operate under general law, general state law, and it defines the governance in a very general, broad way. And if we charter our county, we can actually change the governance to be specific to how it would be to our area. We're a very rural area, and we want to keep that sort of focus rural, and we want to be very self-reliant. And sometimes we feel like the state too centralized and isn't understanding our rural concept, and that's why we really want to focus on this charter thing to give us that right to local self-governance.
Oh, absolutely. And what's going on, Robert, there's three state split plans in California. One's out of the Bay Area with a five-state split. In Siskiyou County, we got a declaration where the supervisors have said to the state, we want out. And then that got four out of five supervisors. Glenn County was unanimous. Modoc County was unanimous. We're larger with those three counties in some of the eastern states. And then there's another movement that's a little bit different. It's leaning towards a charter as well. In my county, there's two competing ideas. And so what's happened in California is that the big cities have just, they got all the votes. And they're not listening to the needs of the rural counties. They kind of, it's kind of bulldozer. They run us over with a bulldozer. So that's one of the things Jedediah is trying to do. He's got another idea, which was having a local bank, very much like North Dakota, that can really help fund industry. And I guess I'll go ahead, Jedediah. Tell us more about the local bank ideas. It's kind of like a local credit union or a small bank, but it's a little bit here. I'll let him tell the details.
Well, in concept, it's really like trying to decentralize the Federal Reserve, and it's another belief that I have that decentralization and having the governance local is the best concept. What North Dakota has is a public bank, that and it's a state bank, so it's the Bank of North Dakota. And what they do there, instead of having all of their reserves put into various Wall Street banks, where the Wall Street banks will charge them fees for holding their assets and doing the banking things that most governments need done, and then the Wall Street Bank also takes this money and invests it in various investments across, well, really, who knows where they're investing it, and then they keep the profit. So the concept that North Dakota has done is that they have made their own state bank. And with this state bank, they put all their assets in there, and they save themselves, of course, the fees that are usually associated with other banking. And then they partner with small local banks. Like this is where your community banks will come in. They partner with these small banks to use those assets to invest in the local infrastructure and local business loans and home loans. They do various things that basically are cheaper and easier and safer than the standard Wall Street banking system is. So it's very decentralized and focused on local growth.
Well, yeah, he had a point about the oil boom going on in North Dakota. Why don't you go ahead and tell us some more about the oil boom and how the banks are ready to help industry?
Well, right. Right now, North Dakota is sitting, I mean, a lot of people know that North Dakota's economy is booming. They have super low unemployment, like 3%. They have absolutely, like, minimal foreclosure rates, and they're really doing very well in that aspect. And a lot of people point to the fact that they have oil, and that's why. Well, there are other places in the country that also have oil, and they're not doing nearly as well as they are. The real reason that they're doing so well with this new resource is that the bank was ready to go to invest and have the infrastructure, and realizing that this would be a really good thing to keep themselves self-reliant. And it was that recognition that that only a local and a state bank can have in seeing that investment that can be recognized in a public bank manner.
Yeah, so as any businessman knows, that when there's an opportunity, you need investors, you need money, and that's what North Dakota basically was established, and that's what he's trying to do in his county. What do you think about, say, constitutional sheriffs or the Sheriff Mac movement?
Well, I actually know quite a bit about it, and in reality, it's essential, and it's an essential aspect if you're going to charter and work on governing yourself locally. In California, we have a very, and, I mean, we're not so unique anymore, but we have a medical marijuana law that is passed by the localities, and what we often have is the federal government coming in and doing raids to legitimate federal patients. And what a constitutional sheriff would do would basically not participate in any of those raids, and would say, listen, we have a local law, and this is how we govern locally. So that's another example could be a gun rights aspect. A constitutional sheriff would basically stand up and say that, listen, as a sheriff, the policing aspect is done locally and at this level, and you, as the federal government, don't have the rights to come in and actually do policing. We've passed our local laws to say whatever we want to say. So in conjunction with chartering and a constitutional sheriff, they're really an essential pairing that will back each other, dub each other, reinforce that local self-governance.
Yeah. Robert, do you want to ask this gentleman a question?
Actually, I was going to open it up to Joseph and see if he had any questions or comments that he wanted to make, Joseph.
Yes. No, definitely. I have a couple of questions. I greatly appreciate you bringing me in again. I definitely would like your opinion on, there seems to be a great divide between the conservative platform and the libertarian platform. And as I initially stated earlier, why I think Rand Paul is such a viable candidate and why he's so forceful is that he integrates a lot of the libertarian platform, which I support, but I also support as well the conservative platform. I, in my opinion, believe he brings in the best of both, which makes him a viable candidate. And I wanted your opinion on
you mean maybe
how
on
you
Rand
view
Paul?
His integration. Yes, on Rand Paul. How you view his integration.
Rand Paul or Ron Paul?
Rand Paul.
Oh, Rand Paul.
Yes. How do you view his integration in him, you know, implementing stances from the libertarian perspective, but also from the conservative perspective, which is totally a different position than from his father, Ron Paul.
Right. That's true. But what I have really been focusing on in my bridging, I've been bridging in sort of a different manner, and I'm focusing on local governance. And when I talk about local governance and governing locally, then I get the united aspect. There's really not so much a divide at all when we start to talk about what we want to do in our own backyard.
Yes. You were stating that there wasn't so much of a divide. The thing is, I regard myself as a conservative mixed libertarian. Where I'm getting the divide is not with the Tea Party. The Tea Party is actually very supportive of Rand Paul, and they're more open to libertarian candidates as well. I think where the divide lies is with the GOP establishment. That's where the split is in the Conservative Party, in my opinion. The GOP establishment who doesn't want to even hear anything of what a libertarian candidate has to say, or doesn't even want to be open to any libertarian stances. So that's where I see the divide. I'm not sure what your opinion is on that.
Well, I would agree with that completely. And once again, I just reiterate the reason why I also like running at this county level, running for Board of Supervisors is what I'm focusing on. The reason I'm focused on that is because it's a nonpartisan position, and a lot of that gets stripped away, and we get to really talk about the issues rather than the actual partisan aspect. And that's what I was referring to at a local level where the governance happens. It's nonpartisan, and that's our best chance of starting to build that bridge between what is that perceived divide, where there really isn't a large divide. And the bridge building starts at the local level. That's basically what I was saying, and it's primarily because it's nonpartisan.
And I actually tend to agree with that. I am an American who cares deeply about my country, and quite frankly, I'm tired of both the left and the right. I think the problem in our country is both parties. Both parties are not functioning, and both parties are not serving the American people in the way that they should. And that's why I look towards Rand Paul or a third party or even the Tea Party, but I am looking for anyone that's not on the Republican ticket or anyone that's not on the Democratic ticket, because quite frankly, after the 2012 elections when Mitt Romney lost, I lost every faith and confidence I had in the Republican Party. And prior to that, I was a Democrat, and I lost every faith in the Democratic Party after Obama in his first term did a miserable job. And so many people don't want to introduce a third-party platform, and I think that's where the libertarian platform is very crucial. And in my opinion, that's where I think it thrives, because I think it's time that people have a debate for a third party coming into power, since both parties don't seem to function pretty well, are not getting anything done while our country is disintegrating, which is the sad part.
And I think that's a good segue into a guest that we're looking to bring in on April the 2nd. It has been nailed down. I just have to have a conversation with this gentleman tomorrow, and his name is Glover, Paul Glover. And he is actually a Green Party candidate running for governor of Pennsylvania. And we're looking at having him in on the show, as I said, on April the 2nd. And so I checked him out. He actually has some very interesting things, some of those that you would be pretty surprised to hear from a Green Party candidate, and he talks a lot about, he doesn't use the term duopoly, but he does talk a lot about the Republican-Democrat paradigm that we're in, and doing something about it. We've had other shows, and you'll remember this, Kelly, about introducing third parties or alternative parties in the American system. We even had a guy who's, you know, an expert on it, or at least an expert in Irish politics, and we all, you know they have a multi-party system there, one that perhaps in the future the United States could perhaps, you know, adopt or mimic in some way. So we'll look at him. I think it'll be very interesting what he's got to say about the duopoly with Republicans and Democrats, and also some of his ideas that, you know, there's definitely liberal ideas in his stances, but you know, I've seen some ones that could be considered both conservative and or libertarian as well.
Oh, definitely. That should be very, very interesting segment, and definitely I hope I will be able to partake in that. Libertarian stances is there's certain aspects of it that I really do like, such as I believe in the decriminalization of marijuana. I don't believe people should have their lives ruined for nonviolent crimes such as that. I also believe in limited government. I also am one who takes the libertarian stances on foreign policy of not intervening in other countries' crises. And so, surprisingly, I happen to favor more libertarian stances than I do conservative stances. And that's what I think is so vibrant and robust about the libertarian platform. And I think if more people paid attention and were more open-minded about and were, you know, willing to hear what the libertarian platform is truly about in depth, I think a lot of conservatives would also be more supportive of the libertarian party, the movement, and candidates who are running on that platform.
Kelly, go ahead. Are you guest?
Right here. Hold on a second.
Sure. Well, as we're waiting, I guess he's getting some other folks that he's going to talk to. I have an audio clip that's just a couple minutes, but I'm sure folks will be they'll remember this happening. And this is around the 2012 convention, and the audio clip I have here is about Ron Paul supporters when Ron Paul was running, about when they were talking about the GOP and how they handled Ron Paul.
I want to make sure that when the Republican Party loses terribly to, in my opinion, the worst president in American history, I want them to make sure that it's because they systematically shut out the most intelligent, most active, and youthful voting bloc in American history.
Hi, I'm Zach Weissmuller with Reason TV. We're here at the Tampa State Fairgrounds with the diehard Ron Paul fans waiting for Paul Fest.
Paul Fest is the grassroots celebration of sort of the end of the 2012 Ron Paul campaign. It is not done with the cooperation or attendance of Ron Paul or the official Ron Paul machine.
How do you feel like the Ron Paul faction has been treated by the Republican Party this time around?
I mean, definitely as the outcast.
We are playing by the rules, okay? That's why the other side is so frustrated.
You feel like the other side's not playing by the rules?
They're changing the rules by the minute.
The few people I've talked to here so far seem to be pretty frustrated with the Republican Party right now. Can you explain where that frustration's coming from?
Yeah. It's largely coming from what we've seen in the last couple of weeks with the fights over whether Ron Paul's various state delegations would be seated.
It was a kangaroo court. I came down here as a delegate thinking we could have a conversation about rules, platform, procedures, and maybe be brought into the campaign and, you know, get some of our planks, you know, accepted. But, you know, they made clear yesterday that they perceive us more as a nuisance than potential allies.
During the state convention, we got railroaded. We didn't end up getting seated at the convention here in Tampa.
Let delegates participate and actually have a voice instead of just scripting the whole thing like it already is.
Romney has probably lost even some of the support he might have had. There is definitely a very bad taste in the mouth about Romney and about the official Republican political machine.
If you even want to imply that we are involved in some kind of common cause with a monster like Mitt Romney, then you have missed the whole point of the Ron Paul revolution.
I am not planning on supporting Mitt Romney.
Why not?
Well, after seeing the tactics employed by his campaign yesterday, you know, really upset me.
There's no way I could support someone like him.
How does this affect your attitude towards the Republican Party?
It makes me feel like they are a bunch of idiots.
Uh-huh.
So you can reform the Republican Party if you want to. Look at the way the Republican Party has treated Ron Paul.
If Romney wins the nomination, I'll be supporting Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson's campaign is making a very intelligent bid for the Ron Paul voter. He's not afraid to come here and ask for the Ron Paul vote.
We'll show the world and the nation that what Ron Paul has stood for is not a fluke, it's the future. Live free! Live free!
The frustration, I think, can get focused in a way that will have an impact in this election, and that would be voting for me.
To say that they'll go third party, yeah. I think nobody in the Ron Paul movement really wants to see Barack Obama or Mitt Romney get the presidency. You know, we're pretty much libertarians, and we'll go the route to the person who believes closest to us.
Okay, folks, and with Gary Johnson, I think one of his downfalls was that he moved too far to the left. We could talk more about what we heard on that audio later, but I think Gary Johnson moved too far to the left, and I think he lost a lot of support in that. But go ahead, Kelly. I hear you got a candidate there for mayor, so go ahead and bring him in.
Yes, we do. A quick comment about Ron Paul. He won the Libertarian Party presidential nomination in 1988, and then he went back to the Republicans. But we've got Jeff Hewitt here, who is from Riverside County as a delegate to the state convention, and he is the mayor pro tem of the city of Cala Mesa. So obviously we have elected people from the Libertarian Party in positions. So, I throw some thoughts out here. Jeff, what kind of got you into the Libertarian Party, and where were you before that?
Well, actually, when I went off to San Diego State in 1972, I didn't vote for Richard Nixon or George McGovern. There was a new party called the Libertarian Party. I kind of looked at it. I liked what I saw. So I voted Libertarian as long as anybody could possibly vote Libertarian.
So you've been with the party since the beginning in 72.
Well, I've been a registered Libertarian. I have not joined the party because I wasn't running for office. You know, I was just going through college. It was a great party. I just liked the idea that it gave people the chance to have say over their life instead of some bureaucrat 500 miles away. I really liked that.
Oh, well, good, yeah. So what's your thoughts on the Second Amendment or even free enterprise? What's your thoughts on some of the way things are now, and what would you do differently?
Well, first of all, the Second Amendment was put into by our forefathers, and I'd like to add the first Libertarian was a guy named Thomas Jefferson. Basically he would be a Libertarian today. But the reason why we have the Second Amendment, you know, I'm not a big hunter. In fact, I have a baseball bat to get people to protect my family. I do have one gun. I keep it, you know, separate from bullets. But the main reason is for citizens to have guns is let's look at a very, very recent example over in the Ukraine. When an oppressive government comes in and says, hey, you're part of us now, and they don't have any guns. You know, it keeps a government honest when they know that the citizenry is as well armed as the very forces that they would order to take them over and put them into martial law, and then, hey, I'm king forever.
Well, no.
So that's happened right. So, you know, and it also turns out that in areas with a lot of guns, believe it or not, there's more crime. So, I mean,
I'm the Second Amendment for that reason.
Hey, are you there?
Hello? Oh, there's some background noise of some kind.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what's your thoughts on kind of how we have a lot of regulations, and do you think business is being stifled by all the regulations that are going on right now?
Well, before Prop 30 here in California, where the governor talked people into adding a quarter cent sales tax and just adding more taxes to the few people that were actually making a little bit of money. We were 49th out of 50 for attracting business. Now we're dead last, just so he could show this token little budget surplus. So we are 50 out of 50 states for attracting business because we have way too many regulations, and not just environmental, but a whole lot of just costs on every level. We have so many layers to the onion on regulatory bodies and everything. And our taxes are, I believe, only New Jersey is the only one that has higher taxes.
Or maybe New York, yeah.
And so we are actually, you know, we should be number one without even trying, and we're dead last. So, yeah, of course we have way too many regulations. And the cap and trade brought on by a Republican governor, you know, AB 32 and SB 375, the cap and trade added cost to our energy cost too. Businesses aren't going to come here if it's too expensive to do business. And, of course, energy is one of those very important things right there. I mean, just to name one.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your thoughts on wars that overseas without a constitutional declaration of war?
Well, actually, as a libertarian, we feel that there are really only two legitimate reasons for government. And that's to provide a standing arm, I mean, to have a standing army to provide for the common defense of our nation from other enemies, and then to have a system of arbitration, which is a legal system to settle disputes between two private citizens.
Right.
You know, after that, you know, we've built up so many layers and layers of government. Now, when we sign treaties with other sovereign nations and such, this country wouldn't exist unless France had hated.
Exactly. Right.
Unless France had hated, And if it took us getting attacked in Pearl Harbor to go in and help France, you know, go ahead and beat the Germans back and stuff like that.
We repaid the favor, yeah.
So we repaid the favor. But with that said, there are so many unconstitutional wars. A lot of times it's, well, let's try this, and it's getting really nuanced now, and it's becoming almost a game. You know, I'm not for staying completely out of things when we have a solid ally that's been a good solid ally and been good to us, fair to us, and trade everything else.
Uh-huh.
Then, yeah, we should go ahead and kick in with them. But most of the wars today are totally unconstitutional.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree. Hey, Robert, do you have a question for Mayor Hewitt?
Yeah, I do. But first of all, I'd like to put out there and give a shout-out to my daughter, who is 12 years old today. So happy birthday, Laura. I just want to say happy birthday to her. Today is her 12th birthday. So we got to have some brunch today and pick up one of her birthday gifts. And I'll be seeing her some more tomorrow. So it's great to be able to spend some time with her. Turning 12, my gosh, time goes by so fast. But just want to wish my little girl a happy birthday. So hopefully, you know, one day she'll listen to the archives, and when she's into politics, which she's not right now, just because it takes so much of my time away from her. That's why she don't like it right now. But when she gets older, she'll understand, I'm sure. So my question is that, you know, we do see how, and we're going to have a guy on this coming up Wednesday from the Green Party, and you know, he talks a lot about the, you know, at least that I've seen, the Republican Democrat duopoly, or you know, the two party paradigm. Do you see a time when here in the United States that there would be, that we would adopt a multi party system?
Yeah, actually I do. As a matter of fact, that was most of my platform in my just completed run for the state senate. And it's interesting that last Monday, the Press Enterprise, our Riverside County paper, actually came out with an editorial from the editorial board that said, you know, the wave right now in California is registration in the two major parties is declining. And they actually said at the last paragraph of that article, they said, if an independent libertarian were to come in, he or she could accomplish things because they share values with both sides, Democrats on the social issues, Republicans on the fiscal issues, that they could accommodate and get some consensus on issues that affect all of us Californians in a better way. And I see that coming. You know, I'll tell you what, we get one or two more of these cycles and people see what's going on and there's no change. It's like Einstein said, the definition of insanity is trying exactly the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. You know, that's where I'm going. I do see, we're not going to go to it like what it is in England with the parliamentary system or. But I'll tell you what, it may even stay a two-party system, but one of these parties will die, just like the Whig and the Federalists did, because they're not taking care of business. And that's what we need to do. We need to get government back down to size so it serves us and we don't serve it.
Well, I must admit, in my opinion, I actually see the Republican Party, and I was Republican for the vast majority of my life. I consider myself an independent at this time. But I see the Republican Party dying off before the Democrat Party, and this is why. I think Republicans, or conservatives, I should say, their greatest strength is also their greatest weakness, in that they are very principled. And if there is a candidate, such as Romney, I think perfect example in the last 2012 election, is that when you have a candidate that does not adhere to your principles, they simply just won't vote for them. They'll vote for someone who does adhere to their principles, or they just won't vote at all. And so what that does is that, let's face it, it does take the votes away from the Republican candidate. Through my understanding, Obama actually got less, of course, if the counts were correct and there wasn't voter fraud there, which I suspect there was. But anyway, he even had less votes, Obama, through my understanding, less votes this time around than last time and still beat Romney. And that's because, millions of conservatives, and I'd say libertarians as well, decided to either vote for either a Brutal Good of the Constitution Party or a Jill Stein for the Green Party or, the Libertarian Party, in which that was Gary Johnson. So they voted for one of those three instead, and of course that took away, votes from Romney. But because of their principles, they decided to vote their conscience, their principles, and where on what I see for the Democrats and the liberals, on the left, is where they will coalesce, and they'll build their coalitions of the different, whether they think that the person really is representing, their liberal views. I mean, if you look at really what Obama's done with some things, especially with wars, things of that nature, that's really not a pretty liberal view. I mean, Guantanamo Bay is still open. I mean, we still have, troops in Afghanistan. I mean, he's still having wars, across the country, or across the globe. That's not something that would be considered necessarily a liberal stance. But they'll still vote for him because they'll coalesce. So that being said, is that I see it more so that the Republican Party would be the party to die off just because, one, they've gotten, they're so fractured right now between the establishment, who does have the power in the party, and how they're ignoring their conservative, and I'd say even more rising libertarian base within the party. What do you think? And let's go ahead, and let's get the opinions of, real quick, gentlemen, let's get the opinions of Joseph first, who's on the call, and then we'll bring it to you guys. So, Joseph, if you'd like to chime in on any of that, and then we'll bring it to Kelly's guest.
Yeah, sure, most definitely. I definitely tend to agree a lot with what was said, most definitely. I do believe that the Republican Party is just a matter of time. I could see the trend that the Republican Party is coming apart, and there's a great divide within the Republican Party between GOP establishment and conservatives. And the gentleman who was speaking did bring up a valid point. The Whigs were a form of political party prior to the GOP when they came into power into 1854. And I honestly don't think the Republican Party is working as a party that can win elections on a national level. I don't think they can function anymore as a national party, or they have not been functioning. And I think that would be the best opportunity for a third party to step in and take that place. And my hope is that the Libertarian Party would be able to get all the mechanisms in place to be able to make every attempt to be prepared, when and where and how the Republican Party falters, and to be able to take that place and become the alternative to the Democratic Party.
Go ahead, Kelly, and your guest.
I want to go ahead and ask Mayor Hewitt about the voter turnout when he ran for mayor. It was pretty high, and some other for a state senate, yeah. And he actually beat a Republican in this special election. So I'll just turn it over to Mayor Hewitt here.
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to clear it up to the fact that the Green Party couldn't be further away in the party platform than the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party is actually the mainstream party that believes in, you know, people having say, keep government down small, don't, you know, let us go ahead and prosper. We don't need all these regulations. We don't need people telling what to do in our own homes when we don't hurt anybody else. Now, with that said, we had a 20% turnout in the special election when we were the only ones on the ballot for this special election to replace State Senator Bill Emerson. And I did, as a Libertarian, actually I beat one of the Republican candidates. So I came in fourth with like double the percentage that any Libertarian ever gets. Things are changing, like I say. I would say in 1 to 2 more cycles you're going to see Libertarians come in. And there's a lot of closet Libertarians, see, in both parties. There's a lot of fiscally conservative Democrats that are not happy with the way things are going. And so when we get a candidate, and hopefully it's me, but somebody else, if they come up there, that they perceive as electable, you're going to see the floodgates open.
So what you're saying is, as you were already the mayor, and then you ran for the
state senate district.
The state senate district.
Yeah. And I'll be running for mayor. I'll be running for the city councilman again in November. And, okay. And then we're General Law City. We pick the mayor and mayor pro tem amongst the five. It's not a separate elected like it.
Oh, I see. So basically, the city council members get elected, and then the city council members elect their mayor.
Each year they pick their mayor.
Also, how much was it? Five mayors? There are five city council members?
There are five city council
members. So of the five, they pick you to become the
mayor pro tem. Yeah, and they'll probably be mayor next time. That's usually the way it goes.
Yeah. So you definitely see a rise in you know, it's going to take, you know, a few more election cycles, but you definitely see the disgruntlement. The Libertarians are like, hey. I mean, that's what brought me into the Libertarian Party, because, you know, I dearly love the Constitution. I went to the National Convention in 2012, and they're like, my gosh, these people, and not only do they love the Constitution, not only do they have a passion, but they're also very intelligent, very thoughtful. I'm still having occasional, I hope I can get a hold of Matthew, because he's like a genius next to Einstein, but he has changed some of my thinking a little bit here and there, and then I, you know, kind of like a V8, oh, I should have had a V8, or I should have thought of that, but these principles keep coming, and I find so many refreshing principles in such cohesiveness, if you will, in the Constitution, love the Constitution.
And when most people take the Libertarian test, which is on a little card, or you can go on our website and take it, the vast majority of people are at least 80% Libertarian. I mean, again, it's something that we've got a little bit of a branding problem, because most people say, oh, Libertarian, that's liberal. Well, no, it has nothing to do with being liberal. It has to do with liberty. You can't spell Libertarian without liberty. And that's the idea. Once we get that brand name out there, once people realize that there is a choice, that everybody goes, oh, we're sick and tired of both parties, we really need an opportunity. Well, that opportunity has been around since 1972. It's already built up in all 50 states, and we're going to see some high-level Libertarians being, within the next 5 years, being elected. And the first one of Libertarian roots that could be the president is actually Rand Paul, who was named after Ayn Rand, who wrote the Libertarian Bible when Atlas Shrugged.
So your thoughts on that, Robert?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading something. I was getting ready to, because, you know, I do multitasking here. I was reading something. I was going to go over, you know, with you guys in the audience, see what your thoughts. Well, what I have to say about that, you know, is, you know, when you talking about, you know, the different elections, things of that nature, and then moving on, I'm multitasking. I was replying to a message as well. I've got like three things going on here, Kelly, so I apologize for that. I got pulled away for a little bit. So, no, but I want to bring it to, I was actually looking at the message when he brought about Joseph, about a pact, the Rand pact, that he was talking about, so we'll bring that up as well. Did you mute your mic, Tony?
There. I was on mute there. Well, I was just Mayor Pro Tem's hand because he's very articulate. You know, I like to try to learn to speak better, and he is very articulate. And so anyway, sorry. So, I don't know, you want to throw a question at him or maybe one of the other panelists?
Well, yeah, I like to bring it back to the multi-party system because, that's something where I think, you know, especially in Ireland, I think Ireland's a great example. You mentioned Europe and the parliamentary system, but I prefer, which Ireland's a lot like it, but it is different in many ways. But it is the same with the multi-parties and how they have to build coalition governments in order to get anything done. And that's where I think, and what's your thoughts on this, and it looks like that's what you have going on in your city, you know, with multi-party politics, it seems to be working well. I mean, you're a libertarian, and you would have to have other folks from other parties, correct, that voted you to be the mayor?
Well, again, when you run for city council, that's a nonpartisan race. So you don't put the libertarian or Republican or Democrat behind you, but you bring those libertarian values. Now, a lot of the decisions I had to make right away were, you know, I looked at this, I said, we've got way too many ordinances as it is. And I've always worked to make it simpler and let people go about their lives. Any good government is a government that reflects, that makes policies that reflect the desires of their citizens without trampling on the rights of the few. And that's where we've got to get back to. We've made it so, you can't do anything. And remember this, when you take away the ability to fail, in so doing, you've taken away the ability to succeed. And that's why we have so few successes. That's why we have so many businesses leaving California, because we've taken away that ability to fail. So when you think about that, it's okay if people fail. That's part of success.
Right. We had that's right. Now, I remember you saying more on that earlier when Kelly brought it up, and that's what made me read this thing I want to tell you, so your folks about to read something off and see what you thought on it. And we'll get there. So, you know, since I brought it up, I'm going to go ahead and bring it on. I just got to backtrack here. So give me a moment. I'm trying to find it. I apologize for that, guys. I just got too many things I'm trying to do at one time at this point. Okay, there it is. I'm figuring this out. I found this interesting here. It's something I was looking at on Facebook. This guy said, I'm a capitalist in that I have faith and human capital, but no faith in monopolies that destroy labor and nature. I'm a socialist in that I want government to respect the working class, but not to dominate it. I am a libertarian in that I prefer government to govern least and most local. Entrepreneurs should keep the fruits of their labor, but speculation is not labor. I am an anarchist who wants economic power shifted to mutual aid, worker co-ops, but not through violence. I am a Democrat who prefers funding priorities that protect the weak, but to protect them against corporate greed. I am a Republican who wants strong national defense, but defense against pollution is war itself. I am green because this party unites Americans to solve problems. So what's your thoughts on those different quotes? This person contends, and I'll say who it is in a little bit, that they're kind of rolled on in all those different ideas in one person. So what do you say about that?
I'm sorry.
Can you re-summarize the question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I didn't hear that really.
Can you re-summarize the question?
Right. There's a candidate who's running and over in Pennsylvania. And he's just limiting it off all these, you know, we talked about parties, multi-parties, the Democrat and the Republican paradigm, and how, you know, we're looking, you know, they have the different views and how a lot of people who think that, I'm giving some background, that the two parties are kind of melding into one, and then we talked about also, you know, about the Republican Party breaking up. But usually when you see someone who's on the right, someone's on the left, you know, you pretty much think, well, if this person's a Republican, they have this mode of thinking. If they're a Democrat, they have this mode of thinking, libertarian. Now, what I read off are the ideological thoughts of someone who adheres to all those different principles. And I was wondering what your thoughts on that was.
Well, you know, that's the problem. What we do is when we join a party, you know, I'm not 100% libertarian. There's a few things that I actually disagree with the Libertarian Party on. But, see, when you try to make yourself into a mold, for instance, there's a lot of Democrats who only use the abortion issue as their one issue that makes them a Democrat. There's a lot of Republicans that feel that way, too, on that one particular issue. There's other issues like immigration. Why do Latinos overwhelmingly go ahead and register as Democrats? Well, that's always been quite a question because most of the immigrants that come over here, you know, value hard work, you know, earning what you have. They're not big into labor unions or anything else. When given a level field, they do very well because they bring with them that hunger of any immigrant. However, the Democratic Party has been able to keep them, you know, and that's where, you know, myself as a libertarian, and I am fluent in Guadalajara dialect Spanish, I'm going to be working on bringing Latino groups over to the party that will really benefit them the most.
Well, let's address something here that it was in Virginia where the Republican got beat by the Democrat, and the Republicans were screaming, oh, those libertarians,
right.
Oh, it's their fault that they lost. No, actually, they heavily campaigned, spent a lot of money to pull the Hispanics in Virginia to the Libertarian Party and Kennedy, which took votes away from the Democrats. So if anything, it helped the Republicans get a higher score by taking from the Democrats. And so that's kind of one of these, that's why it's a hot button I had being a libertarian. And you were going to go ahead and make some more comments about
it. Yeah, and actually, when you're talking about that a lot of Republicans hate the libertarians because they think that 2 or 3% that we might get will go ahead and be the difference that will, and that like we're only taking away from Republicans. Now, what does that say about your party? Here's the problem. You know, it just happened on March 11th when Jolly beat Sink in that congressional district in Florida. There was a libertarian running named Lucas Overby who actually got them to both come on a local channel there and do a debate. He did very well. Even with Rand Paul calling up, robocalling Republican stuff in the state saying, don't vote for Lucas Overby, vote for Jolly, he's for small government, Lucas Overby still got 5%. He might have got 8% or even 10% had his own guy that is now in the Republican Party not done those robocalls. So, I mean, we've got to get past that. We've got to rebrand it. You want a new party, you can't take something, just some old, it's like taking an old NFL coach and just keep circulating them around to a new team. We need new blood, and libertarians bring that new blood, and they bring the real ideas that this country needs right now to keep it great and prosperous.
Well, and that's a great point, and I agree. I mean, after the 2012 election and, you know, Romney lost, I mean, I had people, because I was vetting, you remember this, Kelly, we're vetting a lot of alternative party, third party candidates, especially from the Libertarian and the Constitution parties. And some of the people who spoke with me both on and off air afterwards, you would think that, you know, Bard's logic, political talk, single-handedly cost, you know, Romney the election just by us informing folks that there's an alternative so that they, if they found themselves not in their conscience able to vote for Romney, that there was, you know, someone out there, you know, or a party out there that fit their own, you know, personal ideology. And so by me putting that out, you know, someone found I single-handedly, you know, caused Romney to lose. I wish I was that influential. There'd be a lot of different things changing if that was the case. That's a certain.
The 2012 election told us one thing. That the old adage that if the economy stupid no longer holds true. I mean, everybody said, you know, hey, with that horrible economy, there's no way Barack Obama is going to get reelected. Well, guess what? We have to change the dynamics now, and we have to go after those Latinos. We have to go after the people that aren't voting and give a message that says, hey, you know, the government's not Santa Claus. If the government stays out of your way and lets things prosper and thrive, then everybody does better. Because, you know, Margaret Thatcher said it best. She said the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money. And that's what we're, you know, here's the thing. When you're talking about a social program, and this is what I hate about a lot of people that says, I think we should really go ahead and take care of all the poor and take care of all these people that are out of work or this or that. Well, guess what? When you start paying a man not to work, he will not work. And at least when a thief or a burglar comes in and steals something from you at night, they're taking the danger of getting caught or shot or jailed or whatever. But when the government comes in and takes all your money and gives it to somebody else that just happens to be on a government program who's perfectly capable of working but just won't take what they think is beneath them, then that's cowardice way of stealing. And that's the things we have to start looking at. We have to start getting, you know, we have to start having shame with taking all these government goodies and have people getting back to go, hey, I may have to start at the bottom, but I'm going to work my way back again. And this society, it's almost like, hey, if you work hard for your money, what kind of fool are you when you got all these gimmies? We got to get away from that. It's got to be a cultural change.
You make some very poignant points, certainly, and especially with it's the economy stupid, you know, how it used to be, as you said, and I agree, where it used to be, okay, and I mean, I thought that, a lot of folks thought that. I mean, I thought, how in the world can Obama win with the economy being in such a mess, and indeed he won, and people want to blame, you know, folks like us. They want to blame the, you know, libertarians or folks who, you know, want to show people there is an alternative. You know, they want to blame us. But if you want to blame anyone, you know, blame the Republican Party for, you know, putting a candidate, touting a candidate such as Mitt Romney was, you know, the most electable and the one best suited to beat Obama, which the exact opposite is true. And he was the worst candidate to go up against Obama. So you can blame the Republicans,
yeah,
in my opinion, for Romney's
loss. I think Romney probably would have made a fairly good president. The problem was this, too, and you can't put down the fact that he's part of a particular religion that a lot of the rest of the Christian religion regards as a cult. And that was working against him. You know, my own personal beliefs on that had nothing to do with whether he's going to be a good president or not. But there's a lot of people that have been told all their life that, oh, that's not as difficult. And so that worked against him. You know, and in that election, it wouldn't have taken much to get it going the other way. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, we're going to see the midterms. This Obamacare thing could blow up on him, and it should. And maybe we'll have a lame duck president for his last 2 years. But until we get libertarians in there, this country is never going to see the glory that it can really accomplish. I mean, we should be in the most golden years with the technology, with all the mm-hmm. healthy people that we have that can really get out there and do the best. I mean, and be the envy and actually the model of the rest of the world because of what we have here. Because we truly are a country that was born on a dream, and it's a 240-year experiment that can get better as it goes on. But we have to go ahead and put the kind of candidates out there that people will get behind. And that's what I'm going to try to do.
Well, certainly. Now, I have a question for you. Now, you're mayor now, so what would be the – what's your next step? Are you thinking about running for any higher office?
Well, I've got to run for re-election in November for the city of Palo Mesa. So, you know, you mm-hmm. can't take anything for granted. They seem to like me, but I'm going to definitely – but in two more years, I'll probably run for the Assembly of the State Senate again. And I will run as a much, much wiser individual. I know exactly what it takes, but I will be working to build up a base, a libertarian base that is sizable in the Inland Empire.
And do you think that California is a good place to start for the Libertarian Party to start getting national recognition?
Actually, it's the perfect place. A lot of things have been first in California. And I'm telling you, here's the dirty little secret that most people don't understand. I mean, when I was out there campaigning, in 3 days I spoke at a Democratic club, a Tea Party club, and a Libertarian club. And believe me, the Libertarians are the toughest. I mean, they ask you the hardest questions. They don't let anything slide. And that's my party, you know. But I got received at the Democratic club probably better than anything. And there's a lot of Democrats that are not happy with the way things are in this state. There's a lot of the old Democrats and stuff like that that were a little bit more socially liberal and stuff, but they wanted, you know, that money to be used right, and they don't want to give it away to people that aren't deserving, stuff like that. Those ones will not go to the Republican Party because they've been taught that that's like going over the devil. But they will embrace
yeah.
the Libertarian candidate unlike anything you've ever seen. And that's, you know, that. So...
Well, I want to bring you over to Joseph. I want to bring you in and see if there's any comments or questions that you have.
Yes, thank you for bringing me in again. Just wanted to give you I wanted to ask you a few questions pertaining to the comments that were made about the Romney election back in 2012 and as the factors as why he lost. I happen to be a part of that ticket working out of New York. I was a campaign representative for the Mitt Romney campaign. And I know there's a lot of theories out there as to why he lost. Some people say because he was a Mormon, that played a factor. A lot of people said, just fiscal reform didn't suffice. But to be very honest, the reason why Mitt Romney lost, in my opinion, is because he did not wage an aggressive enough campaign against Obama. And the six battleground states at that time that he needed to secure, and had he secured those six battleground states with the red states that he picked up, which at that time the six battleground states were Ohio, Florida, Michigan, Colorado, Arizona, and Wisconsin, he would have won enough electoral votes to win the election. And about 2 days prior to the election day to vote, which was November the 7th, Quinnipiac and other major polls had him either 1 point behind Obama or in a dead heat in all battleground states. So what I think it all came down to his debacle was he was not aggressive enough in the debates. He didn't press hard enough on the big Anzi issue. And that's where I think he faltered. I honestly don't think any other factors contributed in that. He was very strong on jobs and the economy and on that focus, and I think many people voted for him for that sole reason. And I wanted to get your take on that.
Sure, and I'll one of my responses to that would be, and then we'll bring it to you, Kelly, and then the guests. I'm going to start by playing this audio clip, and you guys tell me if you think this played a part. And it's a very just one-minute clip, and the part in Romney why he lost.
Romney's all-day bus tour made a stop in Worcester this afternoon, where supporters gathered to cheer him on and rally the troops to get out the vote. Voter turnout is expected to decide this race, with a large turnout expected to help Romney. With that in mind, the campaign has set up 38 phone banks and targeted 150,000 undecided and unenrolled voters to receive phone calls. Many Democrats say a tie in the polls gives the edge to Shannon O'Brien because she has that statewide organization, including union and minority support. But the Romney campaign says that support is overrated and is eroding. They point to the recent endorsement from El Mundo, the largest Spanish-speaking newspaper in the state.
I think the old, standby definitions of who votes for which party have been blown away in this campaign. I think people recognize that I'm not a partisan Republican, that I'm someone who is moderate, and that my views are progressive, and that I'm going to go to work for our senior citizens, for people who've been left behind by urban schools that are not doing the right job, and so they're going to vote for me regardless of the party label.
So him stating he's a moderate, his views are progressive, and then looking at history where, a moderate Republican has not really won a general election in about 40 years, do you think that people looking at his record, at Romney's record and how he voted in Massachusetts and what he did in Massachusetts, and then also him not really...
Hey, Robert.
Yep.
Are you asking
about
Mayor Hewitt?
Go ahead, Kelly. Go ahead.
Mayor Hewitt, he had to attend to just mingle, and that's kind of... I'm kind of myself want to mingle and have a glass of wine or something, but I got another gentleman here. I met him last year at the state convention, and we both have the same United States Congressman, Doug LaMalfa, and Doug LaMalfa is a freshman in Congress, and he has a 70% constitutional approval. But Don here... he's from Nevada County. Don here has communicated that Mr. LaMalfa has done some interesting trickery. So, Don, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself. You say you're a tree farmer?
Well, I do a lot of different things. My profession is locomotive engineer, and I also have a Christmas tree farm. And in this latest farm bill, I found out that now I'm going to have to pay a 15 cents a tree tax for every tree I cut, so that the government can advertise for me. Now, they do this with about 20 different products, and I've been doing my own advertising for 30 years. I really don't need somebody to do that for me, and it's very irritating for me, even though it's a small amount of money, to have to pay that tax when they're paying rice subsidies to the rice farmers like LaMalfa.
Well, and also, you know, I'm sure you've seen speaking of commercials, I'm sure you've seen, you know, the commercials about Obamacare, and, you know, our tax dollars are being used for those.
Well, I'm not happy about that either.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm happy about that. So you're saying, and I want to make sure it's clear for myself and the audience, that they take 15 cents per tree that you cut and use it to – in what way are they advertising for you?
Well, I don't know what that advertisement will be yet, but the main thing is I don't need it, I don't want it, and I don't want to pay for it.
Right, so, yeah, my point is that
let me ask
how
is
that commercial
going to
benefit you or the ad?
The what? Well, what if the state government decided to put out an ad against Christmas trees?
Well, yeah, that's my point. And he said, and he just said that you don't even know what the ad's going to be, and you know, so you know, and they're already taking the money for it, and also, it's a private business. Why would they take tax dollars, you know, public money from you in order to, you know, make an ad for you where you don't have any? Do you have any say in the? I'm presuming you don't.
Oh no, I have any, absolutely no say in it at all.
And what the ad's going to be?
I have no idea what the ad's going to be. I'm sure that probably the National Christmas Tree Growers Association. I'm a member of California Christmas Tree Growers. This is under the Farm Bill that was just passed. I have no say in this. My congressman did this for me.
Well, why don't you? I want to ask. Okay, so Doug LaMalfa initially was against the trade agreement, the Pacific Rim. And Don, why don't you go ahead and tell us. He's got a little bit more inside information than I do on my own congressman. But yeah, go ahead and tell us about that switch on the Pacific Rim Trade Agreement.
Well, originally the Pacific Rim Trade Agreement didn't include rice in the agreement. And as I understand from a source in the Republican Party that after they added rice to the Pacific Rim Agreement, then Doug LaMalfa was for the agreement then. So,
yeah, California has an awful lot of rice growers in the Central Valley, like north of Sacramento. It's really big up there.
Yeah, it's a terrific cash crop for these guys. In fact, they get the right to grow rice. I don't know exactly how that works, but so they're in a pretty exclusive club, and then to get rice subsidies too is just you know, I'm not much of a believer in subsidies at all. So did we lose you, really, Robert?
No, I'm here. No, I'm here. Okay. I just listening. I didn't want to interrupt anyone. And yeah, I did cut off Joseph earlier, so I wanted to go ahead and bring him in. I apologize for that, Joseph. You go ahead.
Oh no. No worries there. You didn't do that intentionally. So, but no, you did play me that clip from the Mitt Romney election in 2012. And It's kind of embarrassing. I didn't really quite understand what he was trying to articulate or what he was trying to get at that clip. If maybe you can help me to understand what he was trying to message.
Mitt Romney was just, you know, pointing out the fact, you know, that his views and what he's done in his political career would not be considered conservative. He tried to run as a conservative, but he wasn't. And then, of course, you know, he did ostracize a lot of the libertarians by what they did at the convention to Ron Paul. I mean, you heard the audio clip earlier and what they tried to – not just Ron Paul, but Newt Gingrich as well. And so, I mean, I'm just trying to point out why I think that Romney lost. Now, was he not as aggressive as he could have been? Certainly. He wasn't as he could have been much more aggressive. And he could have also, you know, said more about Romney Care, you know, saying how much of a bad idea it was, but he refused to do that as well. But it was also, you know, his and his campaign, maybe not you yourself, but others that happened in their campaign, the way they treated the, you know, the Ron Paul movement and, you know, the libertarians that are within the Republican Party, the way he treated them, I think that it made them move more towards, you know, folks like, as I said earlier, Gary Johnson.
Yeah, the one thing I definitely disagreed, and I knew this even before the convention began in 2012, I anticipated this when Romney did not want to allow the delegates that Ron Paul had garnered. I didn't think that was a wise political strategy, especially because Ron Paul, he has this ability to captivate the youth vote and inspire young voters. And I think it would have been strategically wise had the RNC and had the Romney camp allowed Ron Paul supporters and delegates to attend the convention. And I think if he would have done so, I think a lot of supporters who did support Ron Paul during the primaries would have had a higher probability of voting for Mitt Romney, especially in the category that Obama beat Romney. Obama beat Romney in large percentiles amongst young voters, amongst single female voters, and also amongst Hispanic and African American voters. And the key is Ron Paul, that has been his strongest, that has always been his strongest quality, is that he's able to inspire the youth vote. And the youth vote is going to be critical to the 2016 election in deciding decisively who will be the next president. And I, at that time, knew that was a bad move, but unfortunately I wasn't calling the shots. So I think Romney definitely would have had better chances and would have been able to get more votes had he not done that. And so if anything, I think I would hope that the GOP would learn from their past mistakes. I hope that in the 2016 upcoming convention that they do become more open-minded and allow Tea Party supporters or Libertarian supporters to attend the convention and be a part of the convention. After all, you know, the smart way in politics of winning an election is by any means necessary. And if that means, you know, enabling other factions into the convention in a way to earn their vote, I think that's a smart strategy to do it. I just don't get why the GOP is not on board with that. It's pretty much common sense to me.
And I got two questions for your guest there, Kelly. One is, how can both libertarians, whether they're libertarians within the Republican Party or the libertarians within the Libertarian Party, how can they work together for the common good of the citizens of this country in order to stave off the continual progressive shift or movement of the country towards what we would say the left or progressivism? And that's one question. And two, is there any talk on who the 2016 presidential candidate would be? I know there's primaries. There's some of the people that are talking about, you know, being part of the primary to be the to run for the Libertarian Party presidential candidate.
Well, let me answer these ones quick because I want to get to another topic with Don here.
Okay.
What can libertarians do? Well, just keep doing what we're doing is educating people. You know, yeah, knowledge is really good. And then the other question I forgot it. But we are definitely working to get elected. And once we're elected, just because of our ideology, it's just like, you know, we could influence 2, 3, 4, maybe 100, you know, slight here, there, slight there, in the state house, for example. So another approach is having a lot more representation, and that's something that I want to get back to here, but Don's got an answer to one of your questions.
Well, I think the Libertarian Party can do what we're doing in Nevada County. You've got two parties in this state that are trying to run the state from the top down and force their will on the people, and we're trying to drive the system through a chartered county from the bottom up and tell people they really do have some power and they really can resist the power of the state and the federal government, but, you know, they have to get involved in their government. We want more autonomy in our counties. It's more responsibility, too, but I think the people are ready for this. They're tired of Sacramento dictating to them.
So I'm presuming when you're saying that the two parties who are trying to dictate from the top, you talk about the Republican and Democrat parties, correct?
Well, yeah, and there's another dynamic going on, which is basically the southern part of the state with L.A., and then you've got the Bay Area, which is 5-plus million people. They pretty much dominate and trample over us. But in our congressional district, Doug LaMalfa, there's, what do you say, six counties?
Seven counties.
Seven counties.
And two half counties.
Okay, so those seven counties, just to let you know how rural it is and how big it is, seven counties, we are bigger, I guarantee you we're bigger than the Massachusetts, those seven counties. Siskiyou County alone is almost as large as Massachusetts. And
wow.
We have 45,000 people. We're bigger than Rhode Island, bigger than Delaware, almost as big as Massachusetts. We have 45,000 people, and we are very proud of our ninth new stoplight. and so you've got all these counties. You know, we're getting as big as well. We're definitely bigger than Virginia. I put Pennsylvania's pushing it. I would say yes to New York. Obviously, Vermont, New Hampshire, and we have one United States Congressman. So that's one of the issues we're facing. And locally, you know, when we have 35 million people, that means in the assembly, the state house assembly, we have 80 representatives, and they're called assemblymen, and that means one for every 465,000 people. Good luck getting a hold of one of them. The Senate side of the state house is worse. It's like 930,000 people to one state house senator. And one of the approaches locally that what I would like to see, and this is insider information, there's a potential lawsuit because of the State of Jefferson movement. We may end up having one senator to the state house from every rural county. That's 58 counties total. We have a definite impact on some of this liberalism. But even more so, what can be done, I'm going to let Don talk a little bit more about, you know, the local, again, about the charter, and even more some of the strategies they're using to hopefully get Jedediah elected in his county. With a charter, instead of five counties or five supervisors on your county supervisor, you know, L.A., five people control how many million? I mean, they're making decisions. This is a joke. So a charter county, they can have 15, maybe 20 supervisors instead of five. That's based on the county charter. But, yeah, why don't you talk a little bit more about some of the strategies you guys are working on to get Jedediah elected.
Well, we just, you know, we're looking at a lot of different things. For one thing, under a county charter, we can have basically a community bank, which is like a commercial bank that the county can put the tax dollars in, keep them in the area, and not have to deal with one of the big banks.
and loan that out in Nevada County, so we can do that. We can also, as far as like today, the judgeships are in a general law county, which we are today, are based on the governor's preference. If a judge vacancy occurs and he can fill it, the governor can fill it. In a charter county, if you put that in a charter that it has to be filled with an election, then you can fill it out of the people from your own county. So there's just a lot of different things we can do.
And what do you think the chances on the not too distant future there actually being a governor, a Libertarian Party governor?
Boy, that's a terrific question in California. I think that's pretty slim, really, because so many people are getting subsidized by the government, and we're kind of against all these subsidies. So there's a lot of people that would lose their subsidies under a Libertarian governor, a Libertarian House and Senate. So that's kind of, you know, it'd be the best for the people, but a lot of people like to live off the state dole. So,
well, Robert, I want to address that. There is a Libertarian in heart, if you will. His name is Tim Donnelly. He's actually a Republican. The Republicans don't like him. The established Republicans do not like Tim Donnelly. They kind of shy away from him. Tim Donnelly is running for governor. He's front runner right now. His Republican opposer in the primary wrote the bank bailout bill, so that guy is probably going to crash. But Donnelly wrote AB 351, and last year at the Libertarian State Convention, some of Tim Donnelly's staff came, and they talked about what they were doing with AB 351, which was, and I think it's 351, I get these numbers confused, it is opposing indefinite detention. You know, Obama's indefinite detention. Rachel Maddow even ripped on Obama about that. But the indefinite detention was presented. Here's my bill. Here's what I want to do. I want to get the support. He reached out to us to get a support for his bill, and we endorsed it unanimously. There was only one other unanimous bill, which your resolution, which was mine. But Donnelly crossed the aisle and went to the ACLU. I mean, this is a Democratic-controlled statehouse. And so what happened here is that Donnelly actually got this bill passed. And so that's a very libertarian position, obviously. I mean, you cross a line. When you're a Republican, you go to the ACLU, you have just crossed a line. But only somebody who is libertarian in spirit would do such a thing. So in a sense, we do have that. And I suspect we're going to have a lot of libertarians voting for Tim Donnelly because we don't have a gubernatorial candidate. Now, I suppose if we get lucky, he comes over because the Republicans don't like him. Just like the war we got going on between establishment Republicans and the Tea Party, who knows, we can invite Tim Donnelly over. But, you know, I could see in several election cycles, either the Republican Party is going to go in the toilet, which it's headed that way. In California, it's a disaster right now. So either the Republican Party is going to disappear and come over to Libertarian, or somehow some amazing maybe Rand Paul help. I don't know. Some amazing is going to have to happen, or the Republicans are done. I mean, it's a pretty. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that, Don?
Well, the Republicans are almost in a position of being a third party behind. It's not a party, but the group that is declined a state or no political preference. So, and when they're very close to slipping behind that. So, that's the way the country seems to be going. The whole country is fed up with the political parties, at least the top two.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree, and you know, I just thought it's unfortunate. One of the arguments, you know, for people who are strong supporters of the Republican Party, and I know many of them who believe that the Tea Party and the Libertarians within the Republican Party who are dividing the party are causing the Republican losses, which opens us up, I mean, not by us, and talk about the nation, to liberal progressiveness. And so, you know, where our country keeps continually moving to the left, and they blame that, blame it on that. And so one of the things that you know, we're looking to do is how can we, you know, how can we stave off? And I think this is kind of the focus, and one of the focus of the show tonight, is, you know, what do we do to stave off the direction that this country is going? Because no matter how many, I mean, there's, you know, people out there, they still subscribe to the, you know, the Republican-Democrat, you know, Democrat paradigm, and they're complaining that, you know, because the Republican Party is deteriorating the way it is, it's just opening things up for Democrat and you know, liberal victory. So what do we do to keep that from happening?
Well, you know, the state of California is a pretty big elephant, so that's why I'm enthused about working from the county level up. You know, with a constitutional county sheriff and constitutional board of supervisors, grand jury, so we can drive a lot of we can actually stop the state from doing a lot of things to the county by a charter and by becoming a constitutional county.
So what about nullification?
About what?
Nullification.
Nullification. I am not really familiar with the subject. The jury nullification.
Well, Kelly can talk on that about nullification, where states can, you know, ignore, you know, dictates from the federal government.
Well, we've had you know, we've had county sheriffs go up against the federal government and win. The county sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer in the county, and basically, if we give him that authority, he has authority in the county. So he can keep he doesn't have to invite the federal authorities in if he doesn't want to.
Kellen, if you're still there, is there anything you'd like to add on that?
Pardon me?
No, I'm just asking if Kelly wants to add anything more to that.
Oh.
Do we still have you, Kelly, or do you step away? Okay, well, I'll wait for Kelly to come back. We'll move things over to you, Joseph. If there's anything you'd like to add or any questions you have.
Yes, most definitely. I definitely agree that the Republican Party is not going to be a party that is going to be sustainable. And I heard that there was about Rand Paul possibly running on the Libertarian ticket. The only thing is that he's made it pretty adamant that if he were to run, he would run to clinch the GOP nomination. And he's also currently the co-chairman of the Tea Party Caucus. And so my question to you would be, what would be your views if the Republican Party no longer existed? Would the Libertarian Party have any problems working with the Tea Party and helping to form an alternative party to the Democrats? Because that's basically would have to happen. If the Republican Party goes, there has to be a strong political party that will be the alternative to the Democratic Party. And I think Rand Paul can definitely help with that connection, because many conservatives do not like the Republican Party. Many conservatives no longer have faith in the Republican Party. So if the Republican Party is ousted, there's also going to be a lot of conservative supporters who are going to be looking for a party to form, or a party that will share their ideals, similar to the Libertarian Party. And so my question would, as the Libertarian Party, would you work diligently with the Tea Party in helping to collaborate together to form a strong alternative to the Democratic Party?
mainly for the bad press.
Is that a question for me?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I've been a member of the Tea Party from the beginning, and I'm also the chairman in Nevada County. So I work with the Tea Party. We don't agree on everything, but we do agree on a lot of things. So yeah, we can work with the Tea Party. So,
what are some of the things, because I know this question is probably arising to many of the listeners when you say that, what are some of the things that you do not agree with the Tea Party, and what are some of the things that you do? So let's start off with the things you don't agree with.
Well, one of the things about the Tea Party that I have a problem with is once they get somebody elected they seem to think that they can dictate to that person basically how to vote in Congress. And I think that's a mistake to do that. I think that what you do is you look for a person with values like your own, and you know, their job is to study these bills, and I don't think taking a popular vote of the Tea Party on a lot of this stuff actually works. I think you have, you know, basically mob rule. So I believe in a republic where you elect people that have good ethics and let them do the job, and when they come back to your district, to explain why they did what they did, not try to dictate every vote they take.
Can you give some examples of that?
Boy, that's tough. But we've seen it more in the Northeast, where a congressman, I wish I could think of one offhand, would vote on something that the Tea Party would you know, be all upset about, and of course they would threaten to back somebody else, you know. Right away. So, you know, those kind of things don't help make a cohesive party. They tend to drive people apart. So, we've got to concentrate on bringing people together instead of concentrate on the differences. So there are more than two sides to these questions. So people have to be open to understand. In the political deals, we have to face the fact that there are political deals, and we have to give up stuff to make some strides. So the Tea Party is a little rigid from my standpoint on a lot of issues.
And that's a criticism that I hear a lot, especially to two specific gentlemen that I talk politics with here at home. And so what are some of the things you do agree with, then?
What was the question?
I said, you mentioned, you said there are some things you don't agree with. We got that. So what are the things you do agree with?
Well, those the things I do agree with is, of course, the idea of you know, cutting down some of these subsidies. I don't like. I'm not a socialist. And I'm not a fascist, so I don't believe in the government control of our economy. I'm a free market person. So, you know, those are some of my personal stances. But you know, I do agree a lot with the idea of smaller government, cutting down regulations, especially the what I call the fourth branch of government is regulations. These people are out of control. They're making the regulations with absolutely no, very little oversight anyway. So I agree in reducing the burden on companies to meet these whimsical regulations. And you know, I agree with reducing the size of government. I think that, you know, anything government does will do poorly.
I think Benjamin Franklin said that, and he was right. And so the smaller the government, the less they'll do poorly.
And real quick, I see that it's about only, I can't believe almost 2 hours of the lifetime is almost finished. It's been very interesting conversation. And so, but anybody would like to call in and be a part of the extended version, which I believe we'll go into at least for a little while, just call us here at 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to chime in, just press the 1 on your number dial. But you'd have to do it within the next about 14 minutes, because if you don't, then you will be shut off and not unable to hear the live or the extended version of the show. But, of course, the extended version of the show will be available immediately after the show and then the live portion. And also something we're doing new here is that if you are listening to the show, whether live or through the archives, then just set out a tweet, just put a hashtag and put in all the tweet, hashtag PJNet, that's PJNET, and just put within that tweet the link to the show, just something like, you know, I'm listening to, and then put the title of the show and then the link, or if only the link will fit with the PJNet hashtag, put that out as well. So if you like what you're hearing tonight and you want to share the link, just send it out on your Twitter account if you're a Twitter user, and also use the hashtag PJNet, and just send out the link and maybe a little description about the show or what part about the show that you like. So go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, Kelly here, I got a hot one, if you will. I have standing next to me Robert Tynan, who was on Fox News because he was passing out pocket constitutions at Modesto Junior College, and he's here from Stanislaus County, which is kind of the middle of the state, south of Sacramento, a couple hours. The Foundation for Individual, the Foundation for Individual Rights, or FIRE, and other press put a lot of pressure on Modesto Junior College, and this, by the way, we have to honor this. Robert was 6 years in the Army. He served in Kuwait and North Korea, and he was specializing in communication. But he was the one passing these pocket constitutions out, and they basically wanted to stop him. So I just want to go ahead and let him tell us some more of his story. So you were just on September 17th, which is, by the way, what is September 17th?
Go ahead and tell him, Robert.
Constitution Day.
What was happening is he was passing out pocket constitutions, and some of the university folks, they didn't like that. So what happened next?
It's ridiculous. Well, I was told that I had to ask for permission ahead of time to pass out the constitution or any documents whatsoever. So I had to fill out paperwork, and then in a week or two, I would be able to actually have free speech.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it's the Constitution. I mean, what could a place be? I mean, I'm saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek, but what would a place, especially a university, have a problem with handing out the Constitution? Our Constitution.
Well, I honestly don't think it was so much the Constitution as just simply controlling student speech, controlling when students can say and what they can say, and where and when, because even if you watch the video, they don't care what the document was. It was that I took the time to go pass something out or talk to students. They didn't like that I didn't ask for permission.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's leading a Libertarian Party group on campus, and he's, connecting with the local county there, and he decided to, well, he was a guest speaker here tonight. That's having trouble getting people to, in some ways, getting more people here, because they had kind of a, Robert here speaking, and then they had applause and some other things that I missed while I'm doing this interview. But why don't you go ahead and tell us, Robert, why you wanted to become a libertarian?
Well, I spent 6 years on active duty in the Army, and I basically found that I was upset being told what to think, when to do stuff. And I got fed up with it, got out, and realized that
that's all that's going on in our daily lives, even outside of the military. So I found Ron Paul at first, and then I found the Libertarian Party, and it's the only thing that seemed to make sense. The two parties, Republicans and Democrats, are the same thing. They offer us pretty much the same. So I had to find something different, and the Libertarian Party actually was consistent and made sense to me.
Yeah, so here he is tonight, and I think he's, are you the youngest one here tonight, or? There was some other girl that was here. She looked maybe a little younger, a little older. But I would say quite a bit of middle-aged people and some elderly people. I know Judge, not the judge, sorry, the mayor that was we were talking to earlier. And he was, essentially what's happened here tonight, we have seen one of the elderly members of the National Libertarian Party, really, from 72, to here we have a young man who is, you know, liberty continues from generation, or nation basically falls. But yeah, let's see, if you're handing out the Constitution, that's an obvious. How did your parents teach you a lot about the Constitution, or was, what motivated you to do that?
When I was younger, my dad definitely talked about the Constitution a lot. Incidentally, he's here with me today supporting what I do because I took a stand on the Constitution. But I've always been brought up to respect the Constitution and the rights that it guarantees. And so it was always a given for me that it was very important. But the reason I came up with that is because I'm involved in student groups and we wanted to do something to honor Constitution Day and the document that guarantees our rights.
And here's another little kicker. His dad must be really sharp because I mentioned to him some things about the Magna Carta and he got it. You know, let's see if I can ask you a question on the Magna Carta. We've been doing the Constitutional Challenge, Robert, but let's switch gears to the question on the Magna Carta. All right, here we go. True or false, Robert, okay? True or false, the Magna Carta was the first time in modern history when the law was placed over the king. The law was above the king. True or false?
True?
Yeah, it is true. In modern history, and it caused that was in 1215 A.D. in a field called Runnymede, and then in 1300s, an elected parliament started to come about. And then we went to two houses in the parliament. They went to the constitution. The colonies had similar situations. And then we had a constitution as a British did, except we kind of improved on it quite a bit. But we first had to kick a king off. But a lot of our rights, you know, came from the Magna Carta in the sense of putting it on paper. And when I mentioned the Magna Carta, Robert got it. You know, I've been calling up people like last summer. I was calling up people on June 15th. Hey, happy Magna Carta Day. It's like, huh?
Oh, yeah, I remember
that.
You're the first person who's ever wished me happy Magna Carta Day.
Yeah. But, it's, you know, the law was placed above the king. First time in modern history. And then you look, centuries and centuries of kings, king after king, good king, bad king, good king, bad king, revolt, nation fall, whatever. First time in modern history where this concept came about, and then other nations started adopting this whole concept, and we have legislatures all over the world. So this young man has realized the significance of Magna Carta. So I'm like, woohoo! Anyway, of course, that's where the grand jury came from, but anyway. Let's see. So what are you studying, Robert?
Currently, I'm majoring in photography, but that's only because my college killed the journalism department. I'm going to transfer probably to San Jose State and do journalism.
Wow, so maybe you could be an investigative reporter or be like me and be on radio talk shows and maybe write a book or two or three anyway. Well, this is exciting because this is the kind of thing our country needs is the youth to continue what we are trying to do, you know, for them in a sense, because that's how liberty is continued. Great. Yeah, anything else you want to say? Or Robert, you want to ask him? Robert Jetter, you want to go ahead and ask him a question?
Well, actually, at this time, I do want to bring in a contributor here, Dan Gray. I just seen that he's called in, and I want to be able to bring him in before the live portion of the show ends. But first, for those who are listening in and you'd like to listen to the extended version of the show tonight, call us at 347 945 7428. Because if you do not, then you will not be able to call in and listen to the extended version. But, of course, you will be able to hear all of the show, both live and extended version, on the archives, which we ask folks to share the show through the link. And also something new is if you're listening to the show now live or on the archives, to just put out a tweet with the link using the hashtag PJNet. So just put a little blurb there about the show and then put the link on there with the hashtag PJNet. So that's one way to share it and have others listen to the show. I'd appreciate it. But if those who cannot stay for the extended version, we appreciate you coming on to the show. We're looking forward to having folks on again. If you are on the line, you will not be kicked off once the live portion is done. So, again, if you'd like to listen to the extended version, call us at 347-945-7428. And you got to sit about 4 minutes to do that. So I would do that promptly if you want to listen to that part of the show. So at this time, without any further ado, we will bring in Mr. Dan Gray. Thank you very much, Dan, for coming to the show. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, actually. I'm sort of in a little bit of a mental fog for the first time in several weeks. I actually took a nap. It was great. That's why I'm late coming into the show. My wife insisted that I lay down and because I looked horrible, and then I woke up and there was some dinner and then I thought, oh my goodness, you know, there's a great show. So I listened to a little bit of it and I thought, you know what, I could chime in a little bit. Libertarian convention sounds really, really interesting. We were having one in Pennsylvania, which I did not get to go to, that had a larger turnout than I can recall ever seeing. A lot of my friends were there. The libertarians are all over the map. You've got libertarians who wear suits and libertarians who wear tie-dye and libertarians who wear leather and libertarians in the military. It's less of a political party, from what I can see, than even though it is a political party, than of an attitude and a viewpoint which simply says, don't tread on me. My only, I don't know if it's a gripe, my only concern with libertarianism in active politics, in making a difference, is that there's so many libertarians who say, look, I'm not a statist. I don't want to be involved in their system. We don't want any government at all. And that's a great argument. It's not an effective argument with anybody who's not a libertarian. So from my point of view, I try to convince people who are libertarians from all over to get back to our Constitution the way it's supposed to be enforced, which limits the power of the government. And granted, there's still a government, and granted, it still has power, but it's severely limited if we do as our founders wanted, which gives us the opportunity to have our liberty and to debate specific issues. There are many things that the government does which it has no business doing. And that's city governments, state governments, and especially the federal government. It is very encouraging to see a lot of younger people in the libertarian movement. In a lot of the groups I go to, it's middle-aged people, some are older people, some a mix, which is really nice. You know, everybody from kids and teenagers and young adults and, you know, middle-aged and older. But there's an awful lot of youth energy, and this is found more in the Libertarian Party than anywhere else, because they don't want to be told what to do, and they really have good reason not to trust their elders, given what we've handed them. Tomorrow, in State College, Pennsylvania, I'll be participating in a Young Americans for Liberty Summit. They're all over the country. If you put in YAL, Young Americans for Liberty, you can easily find them. They are having summits at college campuses all over the country. There's, I think, over a dozen, and they're going from state to state. As of right now, there's, I'm not sure how many hundred are showing up that have already committed. And, of course, it's a college, so there'll be more. And what's really nice is that there's going to be people who aren't just fed up and remember the way it was, but people who are fed up and want something that they've never really gotten a chance to experience, which is a free country.
And Kelly, if you and your guests want to chime in on that, and then we'll bring Joseph back in.
Oh, well, real quickly, Robert wanted to go ahead and mingle with some people, and there's a quiz he mentioned, which I took, and it's quite interesting that it's the world's shortest political quiz, and when you it's like it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, the 3 parts to it, and based on your score, it shows that you really like the Constitution. He did a survey around campus, and it was surprising how many students, you know, fit in with, you know, constitutionally minded libertarian principles. So he's been very active on his campus, but he had to take off. But I want to go ahead and, I don't know, get some more thoughts from Dan, because I have to talk with somebody here for a minute or two.
All right, well, we can multitask, and, you know, as I said, going from pillar to post on this one, this constitutional fight, it's requiring a lot of stepping out of our comfort zone, a lot of things that we're not used to doing. 2 years ago, I think it was, Bob, you started this radio show, something you'd never done
before. Yeah,
it'll
be about 2 years in June.
Yeah. Most of us didn't seek public attention. We didn't seek converting other people to a cause. We didn't seek to enter politics. We didn't seek any of this stuff. We don't want this stuff, really, at least most of us. Personally, I would like nothing better than to return to my former life of a quiet contemplation and enjoying my family and my pets and the woods, my books, my music. I don't have time for a whole lot of that. I'm forcing myself to make time for the important things. I don't want to shortchange those people around me who love me and who deserve my attention, but pretty much 20 hours a day I'm committing to this because I have just enough energy to do that. I've got my day job, and I've got a second job and another job and a half on top of that, and it's taking me all over the place. Last night, and this is somewhat related to libertarianism, so it's not really a reach, but we have a bill in Pennsylvania that they're trying to pass called Paycheck Protection. It's really simple, and what it says is that for government unions, aside from police, fire, and corrections, the government right now, as a matter of union contract, collects dues, fees, and political donations for the union from your paycheck directly and just gives it to them. So basically, the union doesn't have to work for anything. I mean, they're going to get your money, period. It comes out of your check before you get your check, whether you like it or not. So Paycheck Protection just simply says, look, you want the money, you still have the right under Pennsylvania law, even though I think it's wrong, to force people to be part of your union or to pay the union anyway. But if you want the money, collect it yourself. And I'm thinking, how unreasonable is this? I give money, what little I have, and most of us do, to various things we voluntarily choose to give money for, whether it's commercial entities or volunteer organizations, charities. We opt to give money, and we can send them a check. We can give them a credit card number. We can have automatic deductions. We can do, fund transfers, payroll deductions, you name it. Your bank will help you. If you want to give money and transfer it, they make a tiny cut. So they're more than happy to help you disperse it any way you want to. But the unions are up in arms about this. And Americans for Prosperity, and this is liberty. This is the idea that you shouldn't be forced to do something that you might want to do voluntarily, but it's not something you necessarily want to do. So Americans for Prosperity has been going around the state trying to this is a state organization, by the way. There's no Koch Brothers money. They gave us a startup, and we raise our own. Trying to get people aware of this. And they've had a number of town hall meetings. And on the web, you can see some of the video where union thugs have shown up and really, really disrupted those meetings. And we found slashed tires in the parking lot afterwards. No fist fights at this point. Well, so I'm up in this little town called Lehighton, Pennsylvania. It's very rural. It's in the mountains of PA. Not a lot of population. We had 100 people showed up. 15 of them were union guys. And I used to be in a union. I know a lot of these fellas. So I recognized a couple of older guys, and I spoke to them, and these are civil fellows who have a different point of view, and they're very polite and decent, and their hearts are good, even though I think they're you know, diluted a little bit, they might think the same of me, but they're not enemies. They just think differently. But there were a few there that definitely were troublemakers. So I made it a point to introduce myself and remind them in a rather forceful manner. You know, on the radio you can't see me. I think I look like a nice fellow, but I've been there and done that on the street, so I can project a certain air when necessary. And I let them know that if they're there to be polite and to take their turn and to listen to the other speakers and speak when it's their turn and ask questions if they like, that's something we welcome because that's what America is supposed to be. But if they intended any sort of trouble at all, I would, what's the way I put it, invite them to step out into the parking lot for a frank and private exchange of views. And so the fellow who I said this to, I will say that a small dark spot appeared in the front of his pants when I said this to him in that sort of brusque manner, not like I'm saying it now. And afterwards, some of my friends in the union reported that he was accusing me of headbutting him, which is completely unrealistic because had I done that, he wouldn't have been conscious. There would have been an ambulance called. So we had this meeting, and there were people asking questions. We had a politician who's local that was elected there, and a lot of really good informational questions. People are taking the chance now to actually get out and learn things and get involved. They want to know, what's this about? How can I find out more? What opportunities are there for action? And there's debate. There is a lot of different points of view, which is a very libertarian concept. And the union fellows, some of the older ones, some of the nicer ones, were taking their turns. We had no problem. And then the younger ladies who were working for AFP got up, and they were giving a presentation. And it was getting a little rude, so I reminded the crowd not to be. And I got up and spoke my piece. And I'm looking for the news feed now. It should be available online at some point. There was a camera there. But after I was done, they just the 15 union people in the back row just got up and filed out and left. And one of the older polite fellows thanked the leader of the Lehighton 912 group, which sponsored this, for allowing them to come and be part of the event. And it was very nice. And I will say that this was the first time that we've had civil discourse and that there weren't any, you know, bad behaviors, there weren't any slash tires. And I put that down to the fact that we reached out and tried to be nice to them and listen to them, to the fact that I intimidated them because as a former union thug, I have a reputation that they had better be aware of. And mostly, maybe, because we were at a gun club, and leading up to the meeting, there was a fellow up on the firing line firing an AR-15. I don't know if he was firing at pictures of the any of the people of our administration, like my other neighbor, Mark Kessler, who got himself fired over that. I'm sure your viewers have seen the YouTube videos of him cursing and shooting at pictures of Pelosi. But be that as it may, we've got a lot of people waking up, and one thing they've got to realize is that whether they consider themselves to be a Democrat or a Republican, whether they're pro-union, which I am, just not pro-corrupt union, or not, whether they consider themselves to be someone whose main thrust, like Harriet, who is one of our friends here on the show, veterans' rights, veterans' affairs, or pro-life, which many of us share, whatever your thrust is, whatever your view is, whether you're a Republican or not, whether you're a libertarian or not, you've got to think two ways. And one is effective action. And the other is action, just doing stuff. Now, there's a difference between effective and not. But I'm not opposed to you doing anything that's going to make a difference, even if it's a small difference. When you take yourself out of your comfort zone, when you go out into the world and you attend events and you sign letters and you visit your politicians and you go online, whatever it is you're doing, when you do any of these events, it gets attention. It bolsters other people who may have similar feelings that you might not even be aware of, who are wavering and sort of just need that little extra push. when they see somebody ordinary like them stepping up to do something extraordinary, it inspires them. And whatever you do, it is going to have an effect because it's going to take the other side. And the other side is not Democrats. The other side is progressives of both parties who consider themselves to be elite, above the law, and expert in matters, and all, really what they want is just power. They just want power. And everything that you do, whether it's a libertarian convention in California, which is a great place that is kind of, unfortunately, the poster child for progressive values, if you want to call them that, of government taking over and running everything, or a bunch of, we had farmers there last night, farmers and truck drivers. You know, that's
well, Dan,
who lives
did you say, I caught progressive and libertarian in the same sentence.
Yeah.
Well, progressive in the historic sense or
modern-day
progressive?
Okay.
I'm a little confused there because they ain't libertarians. They're not modern progressives.
Let me tell you, the Progressive Party of the United States in 2014 is a bunch of liars. And I don't mean they're rank-and-file people. I mean the people at the top. They're not in favor of progress. They're not in favor of improving the human condition. They're not in favor of enlightened laws. What they're in favor of is power. I don't care what you call it. You know, it is entirely conceivable that you could have somebody who called themselves a libertarian run an elitist government. It would be kind of difficult to imagine, but I can, and to become try and make themselves into dictators. But it's not as likely. The point is not that a person says they believe something or has a different belief than someone else. The point is that whatever their belief, they're corruptible, and the people in charge are corrupted, so we have to take the fight to them. And whatever manner or method that you use to take the fight to them costs them. It costs them time. They have to pay attention to it. It costs them money that they can't use for other things. Sometimes, and you never know which one it's going to be, sometimes one of these issues catches fire with the American people, more and more lately, and there it forces them to backslide. Most of the listeners out there have noticed that on certain issues, and it's strange which ones it is, sometimes you really can't predict what it's going to be. Sometimes you think, this is the most important issue in the country, and the American people yawns and says, yeah, sure. And then you think,
I know.
Well, then you think, well, that's not that important an issue. Sure, it's true. Yes, it's another example of progressive overreach, of elitism, of, you know, power politics gone wrong. And yet, this thing really resonates with people, and they get up on their hind legs, and the administration is forced to back down. And this just derails them. This ruins their timetable. So, you know, listen, folks, that's action. And as far as effective action, you want effective action, you've got to get people on the ballot in the primaries. And if you want effective action, you've got to make sure that if you have any third parties after the primaries for the general election, that those people don't siphon votes from your own side. And that they, whoever you put up has a chance of winning, and that you do everything possible to make sure that they do win. And that doesn't mean just going, yay, you're awesome. It means putting out a yard sign. How hard is that? It means getting petition signatures. It means manning the polls to make sure there's no fraud and that people are aware of their choices. It means donating money. It means volunteering your time. And, what a drag all this stuff is. Yeah, absolutely is. You bet it is. And how many of you out there are living in places where they have volunteer organizations? Have you ever volunteered for anything, whether it's your local fire company or a religious organization or...
I have. I want to throw this out.
Go
I kind of got roped into the homeless. The community
right.
I'm in, Yreka, California, we're...
Go ahead, Kelly.
And we have a homeless committee that's formed, and they're making good progress. I kind of got roped into it because I'm an engineer, and they want somebody to draw plans. And it really does a lot of good for me, and I think the American people really ought to... Here's the deal, okay? How many of these libtards are like, well, there should be a safety net. Okay, what have you done to help people? What have you volunteered? Well, how much money have you given? Well, so you're going to force me to volunteer because you're going to sit on your ass? I don't think so. you know, force me through the taking of my money? I don't think so.
Listen,
yeah,
I want to correct one thing you just said there. Even though it's funny and even though it's somewhat true, calling names like libtard, and I even have an article that was in the Washington Times last year, libtards
and
teabaggers.
What about
a boo-boo? The point is this. Most of those people are not bad people. They are perhaps poorly educated. Perhaps they're not thinking straight. Perhaps they've been given a really bad education and they've been brainwashed by the mass media. Yeah, I get that. But most of them do volunteer. I'm sorry to tell you, or happy to tell you, that Americans are volunteers, and they go out and they do things, and they need to do
more. I'm speaking one specific person who is...
Oh, this particular person.
He was in the group for a little while, and now he's gone, and I don't think he's ever going to come back, because I know he's into the Maharishi, all this kind of whatever liberalism stuff, and he ain't coming back. He looked at me when he was... despise when I say, hey, how you doing? I always try to be polite to him, but he's like, yeah, you again. Yeah. And he's gone with the group. And I'm like, okay, so you're going to force me to pay money because you won't volunteer like I am volunteering. It's a very specific story. I'm very frustrated.
There are lots of different choices out there, too. We have volunteer fire company here. We also have volunteer ambulance. We also have food banks at churches. These are just three in a very, very small area that I'm mentioning. We have people who volunteer, and this is, doesn't sound like politics or do any good, but it does improve the morality of our society, the decency. They volunteer to help at a no-kill animal shelter. There are volunteers who just go along and clean up the highway in the spring, which is a really nice thing. And it improves our civic character. So maybe this guy didn't fit in, and he can find another place. And maybe he's just one of those people who would rather tell everybody what to do than to do anything himself.
Yeah, well, I think what he wanted, you know, he's definitely a liberal, but what's going on in the local community, the churches, and one of the chaplain at the jail, I went to his Bible study for quite a while, and a really great guy, his name is Guy. And he told me about, yeah, come on over, and he's a little persistent, and I'm going 100 miles an hour, but I still did it. I even went and interviewed some homeless, take a survey to see what the needs are, which is something. Anyway, but the Christians, it's kind of cool. I think the Christians took over, and they're thinking, let's stay away from federal grants, and I've warned them about federal grants. Let's go to private industry. Let's get the churches involved, because they put their money in, and they start putting their feet to work as well when they put their money in. So I'm leaning that way instead of government safety net. Anyway, so it's, you know, it's a really community I live in. But I want to go ahead and change the subject if I can, because I got some work to do.
Real quick,
I got to talk to you earlier. I'm a panelist.
Real quick, Kelly, before we change gears, because I see it's about quarter after the hour with the extended version. I do want to bring Joseph back in. We haven't heard from for a while and haven't chimed in for a while. So I do want to bring him in before we change those gears. So if there's anything you'd like to make comment or ask a question about so far, Jason, what we've been talking about, the mic is yours.
Yes, thank you very much, most definitely. See, here's my main worry for the libertarian movement in their endeavor to form a third party. I think it's, in my opinion, highly unlikely that a third party would be viable. But I still am going to stand by my stance in that an alternative party to the Democratic Party, which means ousting the GOP, would be a viable party. Because initially, to have a viable party, there has to be a great deal of mechanisms set in place and a great deal of money invested at the same time. And that is one of the main reasons I am with the Tea Party, is because at this point they seem to have a lot of mechanisms in place, a lot of donors in place, and great chances of being able to oust the GOP. Of course, I think it's going to be really crucial for a libertarian to be factored in this. But I don't know how the Libertarian Party is going to feel about that, because I do respect their views, and I do respect their wishes that they eventually want to become a third party. I just don't honestly think it's going to be feasible to have an effective third party. And that's why I go back to my stance of saying, but I think there could be an effective second party once the Republican Party is ousted, which is my hopes.
Well, you know, as far as effectiveness as parties, there didn't used to be a Republican Party.
Is it my turn?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Kelly. All right, so, I want to address the Tea Party, Libertarian. What's going on here is, well, Don, okay? I remember Don from last year's state convention, and Don was a he still is. He's a Tea Party member. I'm a Tea Party member. I still go in and check, and I'm up front. Yeah, I'm a Libertarian, but I love the Constitution. You got a guy, Republican, I'm there for you. He loves the Constitution. That's fine. At the National Convention, I met a whole bunch of Tea Party types, you know, Christians. My gosh, we talked about, you know, spiritual things last year out the sidewalk, a bunch of us. Matthew, which I wish I could get on because he's like almost second to Einstein. He's just brilliant. But anyway, we got a lot of really intelligent people. And so it's a good crossover, if you will, Tea Party Libertarian. You know, Tea Party wants to come over and check us out. You're certainly welcome. You'll be surprised. I was surprised. And the third party thing, well, third party, oh, by the way, to comment, it's very possible that the Libertarian Party is a safety net for the Republicans. I had to sneak that in with safety net. All right. So back to the third party, you know, the Republicans, they were a third party, Abraham Lincoln. They finally got, oh, that's right, the Whig. The Whig just kind of fell apart, a lot of corruption. A lot of them went over to the Republican Party. Abraham Lincoln, oh, third party will never win. Well, and I think maybe this caller, other caller, is correct that yeah, maybe a third party will never win. I mean, I looked at the first debate with Romney, the Romulan, and Obubu, and we had, what do we have here? After the debate, the result of the polls, CNN poll, was this. Who did the debate make you most likely to vote for? And it was Romney with, I think, 32%, Obama 19%, neither, 47%, or 43%. It was like, oh, my gosh, the neither was the winner. It was fun. It was like, and I was so shocked. I'm like, what? So came back to commercial. I saw it again. I'm like, the neither won. And so I quickly went where I was to my office, get online, get that screenshot on CNN. I'm hunting, and they had taken it down. They put it on TV. They got a screenshot. You can go to my Facebook page. Thumb around. You will actually see this. Somebody else caught a screenshot. And I started sharing that one all over the place. So it's you know, and with Christina Tobin, what she's doing with Larry King, the free and equal debate,
right,
that
is
really stunning. So, and I got to get off this line. I always love talking to you guys. Last year we passed a resolution unanimously here at the state convention supporting grand juries. I'm going to put it from a resolution to a platform plank, and I'm going to be a panelist discussing more things about the grand jury, whatever. But I got to start lobbying people, if you will. I don't like using that word, but I have to start making more connections. Hey, here's what's going on. Will you vote for this thing? And believe it or not, the party is young enough. I would call it about 17 years old. It's malleable enough that we can really make a difference when we come in. And I have done this with the grand jury, and I'm going to do some more tomorrow. And I was on a platform committee this afternoon. So it is something, you know, I would encourage people to go ahead and just pay a visit, you know, just pay a visit and see what happens. And so I wish I could talk some more. I kind of get going. I got to get in there and start schmoozing with people. So thanks again, guys.
You know, oh, you're
good
welcome.
Job, Kelly.
It's good to have you on the show, and other the folks that you brought on tonight from the convention there, the Libertarian Party convention there in California.
You betcha.
That was a great
show.
Thanks. I wanted to
good night,
address.
Kelly. Good luck.
Yes,
ahead, Dan.
I wanted to address the idea of the third party. There didn't used to be a Republican Party. There were the Democrats and the Whigs, and the Whigs were going along with the Democrats. And people got fed up with it. And after three election cycles, the Republicans took back the president's, took for the first time the presidency under Abraham Lincoln and took the House and the Senate as well. What is important is not organization. That is key. It's not money, and that is key. The most important thing is that people want it. People have power. Each individual person has more power than they imagine, and the government has less power than they want us to think. When individual people get together and they decide they want something, whether it's charitable donations for a tsunami, which even though the rest of the world said we were chintzy because our government didn't give quite as much as they wanted, people voluntarily chose to give more than the rest of the world put together. Okay? When we want to do something, we do it. And as far as organization, there are people who can organize. There are people who are not like me. They're great with computers and numbers and things like that. And I'm grateful for them. Those talents are just crucial. You can do a lot with organization, and look at the progressives, because they don't have the people, but they have organization. The Organizing for America Obama campaign is outstanding at organizing, at getting what resources they have marshaled in a very coherent and cogent way to make sure that they get results. But they can't stand against the people. And money makes a difference. Everyone talks about the Koch brothers. They're number 58 or something on the list of political donors in this country. Unions are the top six. George Soros, of course, is up there in the top five or ten. Mm-hmm. And money makes a big difference. Right now, the Chamber of Commerce, which is not small businesses, it's mega businesses, they're pushing real hard in a time of high unemployment and a time of economic near collapse for open borders. They want more workers coming to this country with no or low skills, and it would be a buyer's market as far as if you're a big employer, and pretty much screws all the regular people who are already still here and want to work. And they have money and they can be effective, but they can't stand against the people. So the first thing is you have to get the hearts and the minds and the guts of the people. And I have to tell you, folks, most people you cannot reach through their minds. I'm a guy who loves intellect. I love philosophical discussion and reading and really thinking deeply about things. I'm not claiming that I'm wise or anything like that, but I love to read the founders and just marvel at their wisdom and really think about what is it that they were talking about here? How did they come to these concepts? What other philosophers were they reading? What did they see in the world that convinced them that this was true? And how the heck did they ever manage to make it into a workable government? And they did it. But you're not going to reach most people that way. You can reach them through their hearts, and that's what the progressives have done. They've lied, of course, but they said if it saves even one child, if it's a good-sounding thing, and everyone who has a decent heart, and that's a lot of Americans are really nice folks, they go, yeah, that does sound nice. I do want to help. Sure, take my freedom. Take my money. And then you can reach them through the gut, and the IRS does that, or the paycheck. You can slam them hard. You can tell them that we've got to handcuff you and strip search you for your protection because you might have a parking ticket. The gut is a good way to get people when they see some horrible thing happening that just, in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is not that far from where I'm at, there is a big uproar because the federal government partnered with the local police, and I cannot believe these people went along with it. And they did so-called voluntary stops where they had roadblocks and forced you into a parking lot, asked you in a very forceful manner if you wouldn't mind participating, and nobody said no because they're kind of intimidated by all those flashing lights and armed men with guns pointing flashlights in their faces. And they had people giving up DNA samples.
Wow.
All right, that's gut. And when that hit the news, because it was several hundred people who were affected, and one of them has got a lawsuit going right now, a federal lawsuit. But when that hit the news local, we got really fired up. That is just unconscionable. And that's in our backyard. And that's people we know. And then we made sure, because we're talking about it, And you know how the web is with traffic. The more people talk about it, the higher ranking it gets. And the more you share it with people, if they also find it to be an interesting story, you know, whatever it is out there, if you're interested in it and you share it and other people are interested, it gets traction. Sometimes it's stories like that, and sometimes it's just a story of grump, you know, a picture of Grumpy Cat with a caption. But this is the power Americans have. Why do you think that the people with the money are trying to undermine us and convince us to go along? Why are the people with the power trying to undermine us and convince us to go along? Why don't the people with the money just buy us? Why don't the people with the power just force us? Because they don't have enough money or power, and all their money or power comes from us anyway. We can withhold it. You pick a business out there that you like. Say you feel strongly, and this happened last year and it's still happening, about Chick-fil-A and what the owner of that business is saying. You may or may not. Some chose to boycott it. Now, if the majority of Americans had chosen to boycott it, that business would be out of business in 3 months. They wouldn't be making money in a week, and several months later, their creditors and their shareholders would say, we can't continue. This is ridiculous. We're done. We're taking our money elsewhere. But the way it worked in that instance was the American people, vast majority of them, said, you know what? The heck with that boycott. We support these guys. And they went and they bought there, which means since people don't generally eat three lunches, that other businesses did not get that money. So McDonald's did not make money. And, by the way, they're struggling a little bit. And Burger King and Roy Rogers and Long John Silver's, these aren't plugs, but these are just places local. I'm sure California has their own, you know, versions of the chain restaurants, did not make a fraction of money. When one person doesn't buy lunch, it's nothing. When a million people don't buy lunch somewhere, it is something. And when they buy it at a specific place because they support that place, because of what the people in that place or who own that place are doing, that business makes money. And when it makes money, it has more to do and more power to do it with. I'm on a rant, so stop me.
Yeah, you go right ahead, Dan. It's, I'm sorry. Today was my daughter's birthday.
Oh, congratulations
and,
to her.
Yeah, she's 12. Well, it's, I guess yesterday you could take, technically. Because it's now it's the 29th of April. But, yes, yesterday was her birthday, and it was pretty nice. I, you know, got up early, went to bed late last night. We got up early, and we had some brunch, and I picked up one of her birthday presents and got to see her at a fish fry tonight and spend some time with her. And then I do shared parenting with my ex-wife with her, so she's with her now. But it was nice, but – Yeah, I'll be honest, it's kind of taken the past couple of days, it's taken it out of me a little bit. So
You know, Bob, that's a good point. People often tell me that they're astounded. How can you possibly keep up the schedule you're doing? And I tell them I don't take any credit for it. I'm not really sure that the energy must be coming from some higher power. I believe that's my belief. I can't prove it. And that maybe I'm doing something that's that important that if it does sacrifice some things in my life, then perhaps it's worth it just to save those things for myself and others. But there is a limit physically. I passed out this evening. I took a 3-hour nap, and now I've got to work. And I'm editing another piece for American Spring as we speak, and I got to do that thing in the morning at Penn State, you know, is like 130 miles away, and that's
great.
Wow.
Drug
well,
safety.
It's fine. But the point is, whatever you want to do, be careful. You can extend yourself, but do it incrementally and do it with most people out there understand sports. What it means is that you don't go out and try and play a regular season game, and you don't give it the effort that you would give a postseason game without conditioning, without spring training. And most of us are mentally at least slack. We've been meant. This is the image would be. We've been sitting on our sofas, you know, with a bag of chips and a nice high-calorie beverage of whatever kind we like, enjoying the trash that they put on TV for fun.
The non-reality reality shows that I rail against.
Hey, if that's what you like, that's fine. You know, people like all kinds of stuff. That's their right to like it. I think a lot of it's junk. Some of it's good. You don't have to watch what I watch. That's another example of the power of the people. But you have to pace yourself and prepare yourself, which means when you take your first baby steps and you find, oh, my God, look at this, I'm effective, don't just immediately jump into it with both feet. Unless you have a calling, unless you have a specific talent that's in great demand and you can really do something, take it easy. Take only half a step back. Take a breather. See what just happened. Replicate it. Do a little bit more and a little bit more. You'll find it gets easier. Those people out there who have decided, I want to get back in shape, and they start walking, and they walk a quarter of a mile and they're winded, are not ready for a marathon. And this is a marathon, not a sprint, folks. So what they need to do is walk that quarter mile until they're not winded, and then every day walk another block. And in a relatively short time, they're not walking a quarter mile or a half a mile or a mile. They're walking 5 miles. And they're not winded at all. And their body has made changes. Their mind has made changes. They're breathing better. They're shedding a little bit of weight, perhaps. Their joints are working a little bit less stiffly. And they're able to go out and do things that they could not have done in a short time before. But if you go out having sat on that mental couch and you try to go and run that marathon at sprint speed, you're going to break something. And you're going to have a bad experience. You may do some more harm than good. And then you're going to be sitting back in pain thinking, this is something I can't do. Well, it's not true. You can do it. You just need to build up to it. And there are many organizations that you can get involved with which are not going to thrust you into the middle of, you know, 24/7 campaigns. Most of us don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. I wish I did.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah,
they will give you a specific task. And that, for those of you out there who have organizations, 9/12 groups, Campaigns for Liberty groups, Tea Party groups, Libertarian groups, whatever your group is, biker groups, militia groups, find a task for your people to do that helps them build that muscle and that sinew and that endurance. If you have a task that needs to be done, you know, getting petition signatures to get someone on the ballot, delegate. Make sure that everybody is going out and doing a part. And if they can do a little more, great, but don't push them for it. Be happy they've done that part. Say thank you for doing your part. And make sure that you have more and more people. If they want to do more, tell them the best thing that they can do is go out and get another volunteer. And that's
and
because...
And we also have...
go ahead.
We still have Joseph... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we still have Joseph on the line, so I want to... bring over the mic to you, Joseph, and get some comments from you.
Yes, definitely. A lot of what you had to say definitely made some valid points there. I think it's going to be very crucial to get involved with the political process, and the more conservatives or libertarians or independents, or the more Americans can get involved in political campaigns, especially being that we have the crucial midterm elections right around the road. I think the more we could advance our agendas and have better chances for successes. And that is exactly why I am proud to be a political activist on behalf of Rand Paak. And I'm also proud to be a part of Rand Paak's, Rand Paul's Super PAC, I'll Stand with Rand in 2016, which is designed to get the mechanisms in place to wage a viable campaign. And I'm also very confident that one positive thing will come out of the 2014 midterm elections. And this is crucial for any pro-Constitution candidate to be successful. And this will be for the Republicans to win back the majority in the United States Senate. and they only need 6 seats to do so, because President Obama, with control of the Senate, is basically stopping Congress from pretty much doing anything positive to get this economy going, to relieve the burdensome high taxes that Obama has put in place for small businesses, and to implement pro-growth economic policies. And so I think that's the first step in the positive direction. And the good thing is there are some there are a lot of candidates out there who are running for the midterm elections who are pro-constitutional candidates and who do share libertarian and conservative views. And that's why I think they will definitely be viable contenders. And I think after 2014, then a lot of Americans are going to start focusing on the presidential elections.
And I think
Joseph,
that...
What do you, real quick, Dan, I'm going to ask Joseph, what do you do for RAND PAC?
Well, I'm a volunteer for RAND PAC, and RAND PAC is a... organization that was implemented in 2011, and basically what that is it's a RAND PAC that is run by Senator Rand Paul, Leadership PAC, and our goal is, and actually our mission is dedicated to supporting pro-liberty, pro-constitution candidates across the country, and in doing so, we're building a donor base so that we can be able to, whichever candidates RAND PAC chooses to endorse, we will have the financial means to ensure that that campaign will have the ultimate success, because it all comes down to dynamics of money. Most campaigns falter or don't succeed because they don't start up with the necessary startup funds that they need to wage a viable campaign. And that's why I think that is phenomenal that Rand Paul has this PAC formed for that very same reason. Is so if we're going to back up a candidate, you know, talk is cheap, but it all comes down to money. And, you know, going back to that, about a month ago, there was 9 elections that were held in the state of Texas, nine different elections on different levels. And 8 out of those 9 elections were Tea Party challengers who were running up against incumbent GOP establishment candidates. 8 Tea Party candidates, they all lost. None of them won. And when everything was said and done, the main factors as to why they didn't win, it wasn't because they were not great candidates. It wasn't because the people didn't favor them or like them. It was because they didn't have sufficient funds to begin with to wage a viable campaign. Therefore, mm-hmm. they never started the campaign off on the right foot. And that's the thing that really gets me, is that there's a lot of people every day that you hear that state they want to run for office for the first time, but they don't realize that they're doing a disservice to the public, to the party they're running for, and to themselves if they're going to start a campaign with not even the sufficient funds they need to start it out to begin with. And so RAND PAC is the oppositional PAC to American Crossroads, which is a super PAC that Karl Rove is in charge of, and he is totally opposed to the Tea Party and Rand Paul, and mm-hmm. He wants to deter any Tea Party candidates from running. So he's formed his own super PAC to vet and recruit GOP candidates to run for the midterm elections.
Yes, I'm familiar with both of those, and, you know, I'm starting to build up ads and, you know, places for ads and things like this for the show, so perhaps that's something you and I could discuss off the air at some time for someone could come in if they want to run an ad here on the show for the Super PAC. Maybe that's what we could discuss. But go ahead, Dan. It sounded like you wanted to chime in.
Well, he's absolutely right when it comes to money and, of course, organization. But we're talking national campaigns. And even though those particular Tea Party candidates lost, the question I would have is, did they change the nature of the voters? Did they change the nature of the electorate? Did they change the race? And who showed up at the polls? All right, that's organization and that's motivation. Here in Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania, it's a rural place where anthracite coal comes from. We got lots of trees here. It's wonderful. And we got some awesome people who are just like everywhere else. They really don't want to have to get involved in the dirty sausage making of politics. But I will mention two races, which I've mentioned before, that are small races that did not take any money at all, which prepares us for larger races. In Cressona, Pennsylvania, which is not that far, about 12, 14 miles from here, a Libertarian was elected to the town council with the support of Republicans, with the support of Democrats, because we're not so much about party here as we are about individuals. It's a fellow who works hard, who has a family, who is well-respected in the community, who has family here, and he's a volunteer firefighter, and he decided that he's a Libertarian, and he is. He's very strong with that. But he gave the voters in his district, in his little borough, an opportunity to vote for a specific task, which is we want to get the government, local government, out of your business where it isn't supposed to be. What we are supposed to do, we want to do efficiently, and we want to get open bids on everything. There's no more sweetheart deals. We want to save you money. So the two messages were real simple. We want to get our noses out of your business, and we want to save you money. And he got elected. And he got elected because lots of people put up signs, went door to door, spoke to their friends, spoke to their family, got these people to come out to the polls and vote. And here in my township, we have a person who we really respect and like very much who is no longer sitting in office where she's been for quite some time. And she happens to be a Democrat, and I have the greatest respect for her as a person. She's a really decent person. She's still my friend, even though I don't agree with her, some of her political stuff. However, she was in favor of the broken windows theory, the quality of life ordinances that get in people's business and cost them money. And we are not in favor of that. So when that got passed, we got a candidate who did not want to run. And we spent no money, except I think there were some Xerox signs that were stapled up on some telephone poles. But a lot of people went door to door and spoke to their friends and their families and their neighbors and convinced them to show up at the polls and to vote for the candidate that was going to stop taking your money and getting in your business. And he won by one vote. This is where you get the candidates. Look, I have nothing against Rand Paul, and tomorrow morning in Penn State, at Penn State University, Ron Paul is going to be speaking via some kind of Skype or, you know, some link or something. Great family. But Rand Paul, as good as a man as he may be, got his position because of who his dad is and what he believes and what he's worked for. But if it weren't for his dad, he wouldn't be a U.S. senator. We have a U.S. senator named Bob Casey, who is the opposite politically. He's super progressive, votes with Obama like 97% of the time, and his dad was governor of this state. In California, the current governor is the son of a former governor. Bush is the son of a former president who's the son of a former congressman, and Gore is the son and grandson of senators, and quite frankly, I've had enough of these people. I don't want to see choices on the national scene based on what the big money wants or what some small group in a back room wants. I could get together. I'm part of any number of groups that strategize on what to do in terms of activism and politics. And I have a point of view, and we sit there in these little groups and online or in person, and we discuss this person and that person and their pluses and minuses and this issue and that issue and the best way to go about doing it. And that's really good. And I don't want my views to be substituted for the views of the people. I will suggest it to people, and they may agree with me. A lot of people say they do, and that pleases me to know that I'm possibly on the right track. On the other hand, what they want is what they should have, not what I tell them they should want. So as far as your donations, folks, you want to give to large organizations, PAC committees, help elect slates of candidates, that's your choice. My own particular choice is to get involved with individual candidates that I think have the right message, who I think have, I pray, have the intestinal fortitude, the heart, and the mind to stay uncorrupted for at least some period of time, you know, give them a shot and then kick them out, and for people who I think have a chance to win, okay?
Well, and Dan, I hate to
cut you off.
But yeah, we only have 10 more minutes left, even of the extended period, probably even less than that. So I'm going to have to move on to closing things out for the show. And so what I'll do is go ahead and briefly finish his comments, and then what I want to do is just do maybe 2 minutes each parting comments, and then I'll have to close things out. So go ahead.
Who's speaking?
You, Dan.
Oh. Well, you know what?
Just finish some thoughts you're having, and then I'm going to go bring it to Joseph, and I'll close things out.
Well, I'll wrap it up real quick then, which is just that whatever you're doing out there listening is great. Do more of it. Do better at it. Build your momentum, build your endurance, and learn. Learn from your own mistakes and your own successes, and learn from those of others. When you see someone who's doing something, whether it's on your side or the opposite side, and it works, think about what made it work, and think about copying some of those tactics, as long as they're honorable. And when you see something that doesn't work, no matter how heartfelt and wonderful it was as an idea, the intention does not matter unless you get the result that goes along with it. So maybe there's some things that we're doing which we need to do less of and some things we need to do more of. That's it.
Well, thanks, Dan. Thanks for coming on the show tonight. So it's great to have you. And so I'm going to bring it over to you, Joseph, if you'd like just a couple minutes for some closing comments, and then I'll have to close out the show.
Yes, most definitely. First and foremost, I'd like to thank you very much for having me on. It's been indeed an honor and a pleasure to be on the show. I've learned a lot of things about the Libertarian Party that I didn't know prior to this convention, and it was really enlightening to hear what different speakers had to say, and it is a very positive to know that there are a lot of people that came out tonight and that took time to speak and speak about their views. And one thing I want to end is I noticed that each and every person that spoke today, they had a very uplifting message, a very uplifting, upbeat message. And I think that's something our nation needs right now at this point. Most Americans live with uncertainty. Most Americans have lost hope that our country can recover. And I think tonight was definitely a step in the right direction of bringing some positivity back into the electoral process and giving the American people the hope that there is a chance to turn this country around. We just need the right leaders, and we need to elect the right officials to Washington that will do the job that they're set out to do by their constituents and that are qualified for the position to begin with.
Well, thank you very much. And, of course, you're more than welcome to call in to any of our shows, Joseph. It'd be a pleasure having you on. And speaking of our next show, it looks like I'm in contact with a Paul Glover. He is running for the governor of Pennsylvania for the Green Party, but he definitely has some things that I found interesting that we're going to talk about, and some of those may surprise you to hear from a Green Party candidate, and that is looking at April the 2nd, which is this coming up Wednesday. And then on the 16th, we're pretty much got it all nailed down that we will have on the show Matt Bevin, who is running in the Kentucky primary against Mitch McConnell. So we're looking forward to that as well. Just waiting for one email for a confirmation email on that, and that'll be totally nailed down. So look forward to that as well. And so I want to thank everyone for coming to the show, whether you listen live or listen to the archive, and definitely check out the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com, as well as the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And so I will proceed to end tonight, as I do every night, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. So take care, folks. Good night, and we shall see you next time. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.